Hey, this is Chuck Dixon, and you're listening to Signal of Doom.
Well, you know, for me, the action is the juice. I'm in.
Hello and welcome to episode 57 of Signal of Doom. I'm Dave. I'm here with the main man, Stu. Stu, how are you?
I'm good, Dave. Well, I'm struggling with all the smoke that's around, man.
Yeah, there's a lot of smoke.
Oh, my God. It has been so smoky this week.
Warfare, dude.
Yeah, or back burning. Either.
I think it's...
Could be both. Could be both.
The ruins of our society, man. Hornsby's gone to the dogs. I hope you brought weapons, Stu. Are you gunned up over there?
Yeah, I'm going Mad Max. I'm just full on Mad Max.
Good, exactly.
Yeah, mounted a couple of spears to the car.
Now, Stu, I have to something this week. You've achieved it. 57. I'm paying you some respect this week.
Well, we're only 57 weeks. That's not so bad.
57 weeks in.
If you know Dave, that's pretty good.
Plus a couple more when I've been overseas or sick. Now, Stu, Silver Surfer Rebirth of Thanos was the trade of the week this week.
Yes, it was.
And I must say, when we get to that section, I've got to say this, I think Stu didn't hit just a home run, I think he hit a grand slam.
I think this was, like, apart from the fact that it is itself a great comic, I feel like this is the perfect lead-in to next week's Infinity Gauntlet.
Yeah.
Well, and then Infinity War. Like, yeah. I think this is the perfect kind of roll-in that we've got going on now.
It's almost like you know what you're doing with Cosmic Marvels.
Almost.
It's like you actually know what's going on.
Yeah, almost. I've told you at least.
That's a little teaser. Now, something else, Stu. As you know, we're going global, very global.
Massive celebrities. Just.
Obviously enormous celebrities.
Just huge, yeah.
In the internets. I've got a lot of listeners in the US, some in the UK as well, a couple in Europe. But also in our local environment of Hornsby, Stu.
We're now taking thriving metropolis of Hornsby.
Yes. And I've got some things. We've got some dates booked, Stu. One of which, and I want to give a promo, Natasha at the Hornsby. Is it Odeon, Stu? Is it how you pronounce it?
Yeah, well done. I'm getting a plug right, Dave. Yeah.
Hornsby Odeon.
The Odeon Cinema.
The cinema, yeah. On the 24th of April, Stu, they're having a Marvel trivia night, and we are making an appearance.
Yes, we will.
And I, along with Ray from Into the Night, and Natasha's been organising that. She's a lovely girl. We've been chatting to her online. And then also on the 29th of the 4th, which I believe is a Sunday, Stu, there's going to be what's called a comic swap meet, which is basically just like a place where you can buy and sell comics, and I suppose swap. also the Hornsby.
Dave's done his research before he's done this plug.
Also, the Hornsby. Well, I said to Ray, I'm bringing some stuff to sell, and it's not to swap. It's to, unless that's for cash, then you know I'll be swapping for cash. Anyway, so I've let Natasha know that I will be there for that. Stu, I think you're still up in the air whether you're going to appear or not for this, like sort of a celebrity style appearance. You leave it all to me as usual.
Well, yeah, you know, you don't announce you're going to be there too early. It's you want to keep the stalkers at bay. Yeah,
okay, I like the way Stu's thinking. I've gone the opposite way. I've been promoting the hell out of it.
Yeah, Dave's all up for stalkers.
Yeah,
exactly. He's an exhibitionist. Windows open.
So there's a bit more to this as well. so yeah, I will be there, and I'm going to be bringing along some hardcovers and stuff, Stu, to basically flip. So keep bringing cash. You might get a deal if you, you know, speak politely and nicely. You might get something.
Or if you've literally just got any cash, Dave will do a deal with you.
Yeah, let's do it.
He's that cheap and predictable.
I'll tell you something I'm going to bring.
Yep.
I'll give this spoiler to senior listeners. My Wolverine Adamantian collection is going to be there. And guess what's also going to be there? The thing from Akira Yoshida, C.B. Stavolsky.
The thing that you think has amazing value now because he's changed his name.
Enormous value because, if you recall, it's his fake Asian persona.
You're going to have to sell that hard,
Wolverine Soulseeker. And that is a hot item on eBay right now. And, look, it could be yours. So come to the Comic Swap Meet on the 29th of April at Hornsby Odeon. I believe it kicks off at 11. So with that news, Stu, also... wrapping up our appearances, Stu. Wrapping up our lap of appearances through the internet. I will be doing an appearance invited by The Collective, which is the podcast network that we're associated with, a roundtable podcast discussion, Stu, of Infinity War. You're obviously welcome as well. which will be taking place that morning, I believe. They're going to do it on the 28th of April in the States, which will be sometime in the morning here. I can sort out those details for you, Stu. And there'll be a roundtable discussion with everyone and stuff, sort of all the great minds gathered. So that kind of wraps up what I would consider. I was going to call it our Asian swing, but it's not really an Asian swing. It's more of a, we're going Hornsby, and then we're going kind of with the US network collective. And so also welcome to Natasha. She's organising all this. And I said, Stu, we've always organised. She's already showing a lot more initiative than I showed in my 20s.
Like, that's not hard, Dave. No, not from hard. The stories we've been hearing, that's not hard.
Not hard at all. I showed very little.
Yeah.
So it was, well...
Yeah, we don't you can stop it there, Dave. Any true listener of this show knows exactly what you're about to say.
And also, Stu, a little bit of a game that was being played.
Yeah.
With Ray, Natasha, myself, and you, Stu, was to name our top three Marvel movies. Natasha actually hasn't given hers, so I've got mine. Stu, you want to kick off? I've got Ray. Should we kick off with Ray's?
Let's go with Ray's.
Yeah. So sure. I came up with the rules of this competition. It has to be your top three Marvel movies, your three favourite movies, and you can get one honourable mention.
Yeah.
Okay. Ray's were, and he said in no order, which was annoying because I would have preferred an order.
Let's put them in that order then.
Yeah, well, that's what he wrote it down as.
Well, that's the order.
Yeah, that's
so number one is Winter Soldier.
Number one is Winter Soldier. Number two is Iron Man 1. Number three is Ant-Man, Stu.
That's a surprise inclusion.
Surprising for me. That's almost, he's trying to be a bit different, I think, frankly, if I could be honest, right? If Ray wants to be honest with himself, I think he's trying to be different, but if it's safe then. And honourable mention from Ray was Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
One. Now, Stu, do you want to go second?
So my number one is still the original Avengers.
Avengers 1, okay.
Avengers 1. Yeah. Number two, Thor Ragnarok.
Sure.
Number
I mean, two, I'm surprised, Stu.
The surprise to what? That it's not one?
Yeah.
I love Avengers. I can't.
All right.
I can't put Avengers any lower than one.
Okay, alright.
Number three, I've gone with Guardians. Guardians 1.
Okay.
With an honourable mention to Winter Soldier, which I think is the best film.
Fair enough.
But it's not my favourite.
Okay. Now, we'll go with mine.
Yeah.
And I'll do a bit of soft shoe shuffle. And I'll do mine in order of favourite. Okay. Number one, Captain America Winter Soldier. Number two, closely followed by Thor Ragnarok, very closely. And I could be argued for that to be one. And Iron Man 3 comes in at three. As you know, I love that movie, Stu. And honourable mention is Guardians of the Galaxy 1. So, I mean, an interesting selection. Natasha, after being very enthusiastic about this, hasn't actually supplied her, so I guess we're going to have to imagine. I think she had Avengers Age of Ultron quite high from the discussion we had. That was
okay.
That was a bit of a... I mean, I believe it was higher than other people have it. Oh, you notice I didn't have Avengers.
No one had Avengers. Neither you or Ray.
Well, you did.
Well, of course I did, but no one else.
Come on, Stu, come on. Don't put yourself down.
Oh, no, don't take it the wrong way. I'm more important than either of you. But
I was going to say, yeah, it's not exactly like you.
But I'm surprised that neither you nor Ray had Avengers up there.
Oh, well, it's called fucking freedom of choice. I almost put Spider-Man Homecoming on there just to fucking be different. I mean, far be it for me to pick apart Ray's picks, but Ant-Man, really, Ray.
Look, if you enjoy Ant-Man, go for it.
He wrote an essay justifying it. I didn't read it.
I mean, look, I think Black Panther should be put in the conversation as well. Like, it's right up there.
Yeah. Well, it's a number one box office performer, but...
No. This has nothing to do with box office.
Sure.
This is a favourite movie.
Yeah. Well, it's not even near mine.
In fact, that's what I asked you, because you said top three movies, and I'm like, do you mean favourite or do you mean best?
I mean favourite, Stu. What do you mean by best? You mean cinematically best?
Well, Winter Soldier is the best Marvel movie.
Probably, but, you know, others would disagree. I mean, I think so, but, you know, others would disagree.
No, it's not my favourite. It's nowhere near my favourite, but I think it is the best made film.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. You're talking about the cinema sort of worth of it, sort of thing. How well it's made.
Yeah, the impact of it. Yeah, and I would say, like, Iron Man 1 would be right up there. Yeah,
Iron Man 1 almost.
And then Black Panther would be right up there. Yeah,
no, I agree.
I think Guardians is also up there as well in terms of...
Look, Iron Man 1 almost made it there, but as you know, out of all the Iron Man movies, I like them all, but I love Iron Man 3. But Iron Man 1, I could easily sub in as well. I love Iron Man 1.
Iron Man 1 is my favourite Iron Man movie.
Mm. I mean, okay, so I mean, there's that conversation. I'm sure that was fascinating for listeners, my little game that I was playing. I really should have had some prizes. And actually, if people have their own, like, list of three, you know, write in, and if you can justify it with some crazy shit, like, that'll be good for you. I'd be interested if any of them would have Black Panther and Stu. Because, of course, I think it's a chance. I thought someone might have had it. That was kind of what I was kind of fishing to see where people were. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, when you're looking at favourite, there is no objective best and worst. That's the thing. Like, the list could be literally anything. When you're looking at, like, the best made movie, there can objectively be a best made movie.
But even that's difficult, Stu.
It's difficult, sure. Like, they're all of a similar standard.
Yeah.
So it's not like you're comparing, like, I don't know, Sharknado to Godfather Part 2.
That is a lot easier, yeah.
But there you can make objective arguments for this is better than this.
Sure, yeah, it's quite possible. But even then, there's still an element of subjectivity in that discussion too, frankly. If you're getting into, like, say, the top 100 films, you know what I mean, of all time, if you go through that kind of list, you will see, you start comparing. Subjectivity is always part of any best film discussion.
True, but when you're looking at the best made film, you've got to take into account what it did socially, what it did financially at the box office, like, critically, how good a film is it?
Critically?
Is it worthy of an Oscar nomination? Or, yeah, you know, that sort of...
Definitely. You've got to pick it apart, the whole film.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. And too little of that goes on, frankly, in today's, like, critical discussion.
Oh, far too much of that goes
on. We place, like...
I'm in the complete opposite camp to you. So much happens.
What do you mean?
Like, movies get picked apart with a toothpick the weekend they open.
No, I think that there's much more surface picking apart in our movies. But also, like, we live in a different age where the movies that are doing well at the box office aren't the same kind of movies that are doing well in, say, the 70s, when there was a real critical film renaissance in popular cinema, you know? We don't have the same kind of high-quality dramas making hundreds of millions of dollars at the moment. We just live in a different age, frankly. And I think it's impacted. There's a lot of reviewers out there. There's a lot of surface reviewers.
Well, I think the further back you go, the more expensive a movie was to make.
Mm.
Not dollars-wise, but in terms of a percentage of an annual wage kind of thing.
Sure.
It was so incredibly expensive. Only a few people could make it.
Mm.
And if it's that special and hard to make, they made it well.
Mm.
There was no churn it out for $10,000 and get it out there. Like
the
Paranormal Activity kind of thing.
The studio system churned out movies. Like the studio system of the 40s and 50s. Like that was the... Like, seriously, when that stopped, that then led to a renaissance in filmmaking. But the studio system was all about churning out westerns and churning out that kind of stuff, like on literally like a treadmill, and contracting stars, you know, for 20 movies and paying them peanuts, really, compared to today's wages.
But you look at today when they're putting out 7 or 8 movies a week.
Mm.
Like,
oh, yeah.
There is no intent to make all of these movies amazing.
No.
Most studios have an intent to make 2 or 3 good movies a year.
And what every studio...
Critically good movies. And then they'll make 2 or 3 movies that are meant to be blockbuster massives. Mm. And then they just fill the rest of the roster with shit.
Yeah. Oh, good.
As long as it's profitable, that's what they're pummeling out there.
Oh, yeah. Studios now are all...
And people have made a lot of money doing it.
Yeah. But it's funny because, like, this very culture we live in, which we live right in the middle of, Stu, and we comment on it ourselves, you know, blockbuster franchise filmmaking, which is the era we're in. It had been in for, like, at least probably since the mid-90s. So these movies are eating each other as well. So I was listening to someone the other day who was saying, like, the amount of movies that make the money is so tiny. You know, like, the majority of the box office is ruled by a very small fraction of movies. And so many movies just don't get a release now, don't get a wide cinema release anymore at all, because, like, the megaplexes and stuff know that it's like Avengers 3, it's this and that are making all the money, and it's just run them all damn day. You know, and that's just the economics of the situation.
Yeah.
It could change. Like, it'll be interesting to see where we are in 10 years. It'll be interesting to see how long the Marvel bubble lasts, because it's its own bubble. And I would say it's going to last a while, but nothing lasts forever, you know?
No, I mean, the whole idea of a shared universe has kind of come up recently.
For sure. Everyone's tried to do it. And
everyone's tried, and there's been so few success stories.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. It is.
And in fact, most of the success stories were around before this bubble started. Yeah. Things like Star Wars that built on its own mythology, and Indiana Jones, where you had sequel after sequel.
Sure. 3 Indiana Jones movies.
Set in its own little bubble. Like, those survived, and they're still going.
Yeah.
But in the last 10 years, we've seen the potential invent of 4 or 5 universes.
Oh, yeah. Everyone wants to.
And they've all pretty much flopped.
Like, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, we're going to do 7 movies. Well, they're not going to do 2. You know what I mean? Like, everyone's in a rush to get that. And this has been commented on so many times, but it's interesting. And like, sometimes you wish there would be other... Like, we wish that DC's shared universe was doing a shitload better.
Yeah.
If the Dark Universe at Universal had been successful, it would be awesome, but it failed on arrival, you know?
It was a massive flop.
It was a huge flop. I mean, it's ended. It's shuttered. It's done. Now, Stu, turning away from that, we've obviously got our big thing this week, which was the Solo trailer that came out. Now... where were you on this shoot? Because this trailer for me, it blew up big. I loved this trailer. Did you catch it?
Yeah, I liked it nowhere near love. Like,
wow, I really
for me, this was a very average trailer.
Dude, this has been getting a lot of heat online. I don't know if you've been on listening to the fan sites and stuff. People are digging this trailer.
I mean, don't Alden Ehrenreich?
Yeah,
looks so good.
Mm. And I wouldn't say he's the strongest part of this trailer. I mean, he's okay.
No, his acting skills aren't great. He's like, we've covered that before.
Yeah, he's going for...
In terms of the look and how he's playing it...
Sure.
Like, they cast...
Looks great.
Incredibly well.
Looks great.
Every time we see Donald Glover, I'm happy with him. Like, really happy with him.
You know what was for me, Stu? And I want to bring this up, because I've watched this trailer, like, a lot. It's the fun adventure aspect that's grabbing me. I feel like I'm in the kind of Star Wars universe that I want to be in, which is, like... the kind of crazy, more slightly offbeat universe. We're on that train fighting the stormtroopers, and the stuff with Chewie. Chewie was blowing up big for me. Donald Glover looked great. I mean, I was like, I'm not saying it was perfect by any means, and I think Alden Ehrenreich, you're watching him, and I can see where he's going, and it's probably good. He's going for a very dry delivery. Did you notice that, Stu? He's trying to go real dry, and mixed in with a bit of youthful humour. One thing I didn't like, which a lot of people liked online, Stu, was obviously, I've got a bad feeling about this. They inverted it to, I've got a good feeling. I thought that was really lame, but people online have been loving it.
Yeah, for me, the other thing, the droid that they're introducing.
Didn't like it?
It's another generic, let's make another R2-D2.
The one who talked?
Yeah, they are constantly struggling to find a droid to fill that gap.
Yeah, you're talking about the one that talked, that Lando got...
Yeah, the one that talked, the one that is not going to see the end of this movie because it's going to die.
Oh, sure.
The same that K2SO died in Rogue One.
I thought it was very like K2SO.
Exactly. They keep trying to make these generic droids that are funny, will have funny moments and be comedy gold until they die and everyone's sad.
But is that part of it, though?
No, this is actually annoying for me.
Well, okay. Oh, look, I feel like I've seen this droid before. And yeah, it's a droid from Rogue One. I felt like there was a real similarity.
Exactly, and that's not a good thing.
No, but...
Like, when I'm watching a trailer for the first time, I shouldn't be sitting there going, I've seen this before.
Yeah.
And this trailer, for me, felt like I'd seen it before.
I don't know.
Nothing felt fresh. Everything felt...
Didn't like the glimpse of, what's the guy's name who plays Vision? Paul Bettany.
Paul Bettany.
The scars and Woody Harrelson. I'm pretty intrigued, man. I'm going to take Michelle. We're going to go Gold Class to see this. I'm really...
Like, don't get me wrong, I will see it.
Yeah, you've got to see it, man.
But for me, it felt... It didn't feel like a quirky, offbeat Star Wars story like I wanted.
Oh, I thought it felt like a heist adventure film, man.
This felt like another Rogue One. This felt like any other Star Wars spin-off.
Where were you on Rogue One? How much did you enjoy Rogue One? I don't remember talking about it with you. Did you enjoy it or not?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It's certainly not one of my favourite films. Like,
no, it's not one of my favourites. I enjoyed it, though. I enjoyed Rogue One probably more than I enjoyed Last Jedi, frankly. Honestly, if I'm being honest.
It'd be close. I think Last Jedi's a little bit better for me.
Yeah. I didn't love Last Jedi. The more I get away from it, I didn't think it was terrible, but I didn't love it. And I didn't love Rogue One, but I enjoyed it. I'm into the Star Wars maybe a bit more than you do. I was feeling it a fair bit. But this will be a big test. Like, look, I thought it was a pretty well-cut trailer, but the movie is going to be something, and Alden Ehrenreich, if that's the best he's going to be, he's nothing more than, I would say, passable.
And he's doing the entire movie. Like, that is worrying.
Yeah, it's...
Like, if you saw that character in the role of what Donald Glover's doing, where you know he's going to play a reasonably central role, but he's not carrying the movie.
Yeah, Lando, yeah.
Yeah, if you saw Alden Ehrenreich's level of acting in a character like Lando, you're not going to be worried, that's fine. Okay. One character that's not great, you can live with it.
Not the main character.
But when the title character is that...
Yeah, like...
I want to be excited for this movie, but I'm not. I'm
really excited for it still. I must admit, like, I'll be honest, this trailer for me, I've been cautiously optimistic on Solo. This trailer for me, it got me really excited, to be honest. But I am aware of the pitfalls of what you're saying. I don't disagree with you. I think Ellen O'Brien is nothing more than passable. But I'm also intrigued by the whole ensemble cast, like Chewie, Lando, what's going to be happening. Seeing stuff like the Kessel Run, and the reports keep coming back that Kasdan's written this killer script. And the Star Wars geek in me is kind of like, show it to me. You know what I mean?
I mean, I think ultimately we're going to hit the same problem that we did with Rogue One, which was that we know exactly where this story ends.
But that's okay. I don't mind that because this isn't going to end with Han Solo walking into, what's it called? Mos Cantina, whatever it's called. You know, to meet...
In Mos Eisley.
Mos Eisley. He's not going to walk into the container to meet Obi-Wan and Luke Skywalker. Like, that's going to have this one's end. This is set, like, 10 years before.
Yeah, but we know that he's going to walk away. We know that Chewie's going to be with him and they're going to be happy. We know that Lando's going to end up either going to or in Sky City. Lando, we know that...
Lando will betray him. Like, certain elements are... But that's
like, all of the big character moments we know, and we know they happened decades ago.
I think we know his... the woman that Emilia Clarke plays may die. We don't know, but I think that's quite likely.
Well, yeah, of course, because we haven't seen her in any other movies. Like,
I'm not that worried by that.
That's what really hurt Rogue One. Every time we got introduced to a new character, we went, well, this person's about to die because we haven't seen them in any other Star Wars films.
Rogue One did very well. I don't know if it hurt it. It did very well. Like, I mean, it hurt in what sense? Dramatically.
Yeah, no one was going in there with a sense of anticipation for the unknown.
Yeah,
you couldn't build suspense. It's impossible to build suspense.
It was a great story, though.
Put it this way, when he starts on the Kessel Run...
Through in 12 parsecs.
Exactly. You already know what's going to happen.
Yeah, but
there is zero suspense they can draw from that moment.
What about when you hear that Lawrence Kasdan has written this killer script and he wrote Empire Strikes Back and Big Chill and Grand Canyon and plenty of other movies and apparently his son's enmeshed in Star Wars lore and is bringing a lot to this. Like, you can write an entertaining prequel. You're kind of arguing against prequels. But you can write a massively good prequel. Like, it's quite possible. It's been done many times.
Look, unfortunately, this is set in between... Like, it's set literally just before a movie that we all know really well.
Well, it's set 10 years before. They're saying it's 10 years.
Yeah, but we know what's going to happen. We know everything that's going to happen in this movie.
Yeah, but that doesn't worry me, dude. Like, I mean, as I say, that's an argument against writing a prequel or watching a prequel. Like, that's part of a prequel. Yeah, I agree. You know that Han Solo fundamentally is going to be Han Solo in 10 years.
But it's not even a prequel art concept. Like, when they said to us they're going to give you a prequel to Star Wars,
sure,
and they're going to show you Anakin as a small boy,
yeah,
and how he trained to be a Jedi, you knew that eventually he was going to be Vader.
Yeah.
But you had no concept of what happened between boyhood and Vader. There were no key milestones that he had to hit. There were no things that were referenced before that we knew were going to come. We didn't know anything about a Darth Maul. We didn't know anything about...
Anything was very vague.
It was very vague. We knew a beginning and an end point. That was it.
Yep.
Here, we know there's a Kessel Run. We know he meets Lando and Lando betrays him. And he gets the Falcon from Lando. And Chewie meets him. And, like, we know he runs into Jabba. Like,
you're worried that it's going to be a series of tick, tick, tick the box, tick the box, tick the box, tick the box.
I'm not worried that it's going to be that. I'm worried that that's all it's going to be. There are so many things that we know happen.
Yeah.
Because this has been so heavily referenced in canon, so heavily referenced in the other movies.
Oh, even in the movies, yeah. I mean, forget it. I'm reading at the moment the Han Solo novels that came out, like, I think someone, Crispin, wrote them, and there's, like, three of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just started reading them, and they're pretty good. And they take from when he's about 15, and he's taken up by this sort of pirate when he's very young as a street urchin. And they're apparently very well respected, so I'm reading them. But yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. I hear your point, but I mean, it is interesting to know how you'll get drama out of the Kessel Run. I'm interested to see how they do it.
They can't. That's what I'm saying.
Well,
like,
I think you can, but it's all about.
But how can you make something have some kind of anticipation or some kind of unknown element when you know what's going to happen?
Well, we'll see, Stu. It's coming out in May. I'm confident it's going to be a good movie. I mean, I put my cards on the desk before. I've said, Kasdan writing the script with his son, and Ron Howard directing, looks like a pretty good ensemble cast. I was pretty impressed by the trailer. I'm down for it. Like, I get your points, though. I hear them. And it will never be the top-tier Star Wars movie because of those points. This is always going to be a supplemental movie. This isn't going to be like, oh, New Hope, take a back seat. Solo's coming through. But could it be better than Last Jedi or even Rogue One? I think there's every possibility. I mean, Last Jedi was divisive. This could be the crowd pleaser that audiences want to see from Star Wars. Because in the fan base at the moment, I've done a bit of research. There's a fair bit of divisiveness inside the Star Wars community over Last Jedi. And they could be looking, Disney could be looking for a home run. And out of what's been a pretty troubled pre-production, could actually come something worth watching. I thought that trailer was pretty good. I've got to be honest, I was pretty pumped up on the trailer. I do hear your point.
See, for me, I love the ideas that they're playing with.
Yeah.
I just feel like they continually pick the wrong period of time to go with.
Well,
like when they picked Rogue One, I always thought that was a weirdly specific story that people weren't really yelling for.
It was a weird one.
Like we were willing to believe that they'd stolen the plans, and that was all we needed to believe.
It was very specific, I agree.
It was an oddly specific story to spin a whole movie off.
I thought it was very.
And then this
they finished with the end of or the start of New Hope. I thought that was actually like, okay, we're really doing that. Like let's get.
Yeah, exactly. Like they went oddly specific. And then with Solo,
New Hope, we just cut it in.
With Solo, they're doing all the moments that we know happened. Because we've heard about them in the movies.
But maybe, Stu...
There is a better period of time to focus on a Han Solo story that's before The Force Awakens.
Oh, yeah. Well, but
like, is that not a much...
You would never get Harrison to do that.
No, you wouldn't. You could still recast and have Alden Ehrenreich, yeah, because he wasn't old when we finished Jedi.
No, he was probably... Well, we know he was about 40.
So it's the time from that up until Force Awakens that is more interesting for Han Solo because we know next to nothing about it.
Well, I don't know about that. I felt like...
We know he lost the Falcon and that's about it.
Yeah, but were you satisfied with that? I wasn't. I was like, man, I wish we knew more.
Exactly. That is where a better movie is.
Yeah, I hear your point.
You don't go prequel. We know there's a Kessel Run. We know he comes into Lando and the Falcon. And
the thing is, Drew, like, if we want to strip it down, Kasdan has always wanted to tell the story. This has been his pet project for a million years. And this is just his chance. They've always talked about doing this prequel, and they're pushing it out there. So this is kind of his... This is an old man who's always wanted to tell the story, who's written this script that everyone swears by. And they've got on how to do it. So I'm trusting in that, man. I'm kind of like, look, I'm down for that. Like, I'm down for the team behind it. I'm pretty confident it's going to be a crowd pleaser. I think this will exceed expectations. I think this won't be the financial disappointment that people are worried about. I think that...
Look, it's going to make money. It's not going to be a financial disappointment. It's very hard to make a financial disappointment with a Star Wars name attached to it.
Yeah.
Almost impossible.
But, I mean, it could make more than... I mean, but we're talking more about quality. Let's not get distracted by box office. Like, I hear your point, sir. You make a good point.
I honestly don't think it's going to be as good as Rogue One. I think it's going to suffer.
See, I quite like Rogue One, man. I really did. But this feels more like fun. Rogue One, at essence, was a war movie. It was pretty dark. We've got an issue in the notes now, which we might as well bring forward. The guy who came in for the rewrites, he was saying that they were a mess. The whole... According to this guy, who really wanted a script for a Disney employee, he was saying when he came in to do the rewrites, and then took over the directing, because he just didn't do the rewrites too, the actual director of Rogue One took a back seat for the reshoots.
Yeah.
Completely. And he just played ball with the studio, just didn't say anything about it. But he said that they had no idea what they were doing. And the original cut of Rogue One was like heaps darker.
See, it worries me that that's an ongoing theme with Star Wars. It
surprises me as well.
That a bunch of directors now, like this is the third director we've heard of that didn't have a clue what they were doing.
Well, according to this guy who said that, like, this is according to him, and it is confirmed on the record that the original director of Rogue One, after he cut a movie, what he did was he cut a movie, he showed Disney, and they've gone, this is way too dark. Way too dark. And they brought in this guy who rewrote it, and reshot apparently 70%, up to 70%, and got the movie which it was, which is still a sacrifice movie, but it wasn't overly dark. At the end, everyone died, but I wouldn't describe it. Like, you didn't walk away going, man, that was the bleakest thing I've ever seen in my life.
No, far from it.
Yeah, but apparently the original cut of Rogue One was, like, way darker. Probably more interesting. Well, I'd be interested in seeing it, but we'll never see it. Disney got locked away. Whereas Ron Howard, Kasdan are writing, what looks like a fun adventure.
But, I mean, Ron Howard wasn't the original director.
No.
He is the third guy to come in and try to fix this project after the two that were fired.
Yeah, but I trust Ron Howard to be able to shoot a Kasdan script. He's done it before.
Yeah.
Ron Howard has had so few favours in his career. Ron Howard has had so many hits and shown again and again a consistent quality of directing that I've got no concerns over him at all.
True. This is the first time he's been brought on midstream, though.
Yeah, but
normally, when he directs something, he's also involved in casting. He's involved in getting the actors, giving them some backstory, helping them get to the place where they can act this role out.
He's done that coming in. I think what they went for a friend of the family, like family in the loose sense, because this is a guy who's friends, very close friends with George Lucas, has a long connection with him, acted in like his George Lucas's first movie. Ron Howard was the lead, American Graffiti. You know, they've got a long friendship with director Willow, like, and a million other hits. So I'm saying they've gone for a very secure, stable director. They haven't gone for flash of the pan, just arrived in Hollywood.
No, they needed someone stable because of the mess they'd put themselves into with
the fascinating thing is Lord and Miller. You're making some really good points, and I think I've launched a spirited defense of the trailer. And
like, I like Ron Howard. I think pretty much everything he's done has been amazing.
Yeah, he's great.
But he's come into a scenario that is not favorable for him. And no matter how good you are, when you've got a project that's shit in front of you, and you're trying to fix it to make it something watchable, you're not going to be able to start from scratch. And we know he didn't start from day one.
No, he came in. No,
like, he did a bunch of reshoots, but some of the stuff that they did is still in the movie.
Do you think much of it will be, though? Like, honestly, I don't think much of what Lord and Miller shot's going to be in it.
I think it's a 2.5-hour movie. I think there's probably going to be 20, 30 minutes of
maybe
Lord Miller footage in there.
A lot of people are saying that Ron Howard came in and said, okay, we start shooting the script now. And he just ran through the script and did the script. Because that's what Lord and Miller weren't doing. They were doing alternate takes and riffing on the ideas. He said, let's get back to the script. You know, like, this is all reports, Stu. We're not on scene. We don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, Stu makes some great points, which I agree with, your reservations. I share them too. I'm also very excited about the movie. As you know, Stu, I can get overly excited about things. and I am a huge Han Solo fan. But I share your reservations to some extent, especially over the Kessel Run and also over Alden Ehrenreich's performance. Those two things, I think, are things where I'm like, Ron Howard, show me what you can do here. And I'm fascinated. I can't wait to see it, to be honest. And for me, it's a bit of a sleeper because I feel like it's the movie that no one's talking about. And I mean,
which also a little bit worries me.
There's a few concerns, Stu. But I can't wait until we actually get to the date and can actually do a proper review, Stu, because that will be interesting. You know what I mean? We might walk away with you loving it and me hating it. Do you know what I mean? It could be...
Quite possibly.
It could be, seriously, who knows? Now, Stu, I've said, Michelle and I are going Gold Class. Where are you going to be, Stu? Is it going to be normal Hornsby Cinema for you, or is it going to be Gold Class kicking back?
Probably not Gold Class.
No. You and all those friends of yours, those 20 or 30 friends you've got, that group?
Yeah, we'll just knock out a row in the cinema. We'll book out the Odeon. There you go.
Oh, yeah. A shout out to the Odeon.
Yeah.
Natasha. Now, Stu, bit of a tricky one here. I believe it was Tommy Cavill sorted out the messy question of who Luke's aunt and uncle were. I've got here, I'll read out what he said. Well, unfortunately, I'm not sure where it was he said it anymore. But basically, I can give you the crib notes of what he said. And any Star Wars fans, and shout out to Jimmy from Jimmy's Jargon, huge, huge Star Wars guy, who we're going to have on the show again, Stu, and get his opinion on Han Solo. Apparently, they're adoptive. So he was adopted by them. I don't believe they're his direct blood relations.
Yeah, that's what I said.
That's what I thought you said, yes. Yeah. So I'm just saying, Tommy Cavill cleared that up for us. The description was slightly confusing. If I can find what he actually specified, what he said on one of the fucking... This is what it's like when you run the fucking Facebook page and then the stupid Facebook group, which is exactly the same as the page, and then people also... on my personal, you know, Facebook commenting. It's a fucking maze. And
poor Dave. Yeah, poor Dave and all your first world problems.
Oh, well, I mean, I'm running a media empire.
Yeah. Too busy to hit copy and paste.
Well, you know, just too busy in general. Now, okay, but thank you, Tommy, for clearing that up. And, yeah, so they're adoptive, basically.
Yeah, so they are in no way.
Uncle. Did he know they weren't his own uncle? Did he know he was adopted, I guess? I guess if they're your aunt and uncle, then they're not really, you know, they're not mum and dad, are they? Interesting question.
Well, I mean, they told him that his parents had died and his dad was dead.
But did he have blood relations? That's my question.
I assume so. Like, he called him out, and they told him his parents were dead.
Sure.
They told him that Vader killed his father.
Yeah.
So, like, he assumed he had parents, because that's why he was so...
metaphorical. Vader killed your father.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he burnt him in their lava pits, or everyone did. Like Anakin. It's like, I killed myself. You see the point I'm making?
Vader. Not at all. Vader was killed, his dad.
Vader killed his father. Yeah, but... He is the father.
Yeah.
But Vader killed Anakin. I'm making a deep point. You're not picking up.
Okay.
Anyway, so who did they? They said that Vader killed the father.
Yeah, that's why he was so surprised that Vader was his father.
Yeah.
You've seen the movies.
You know, I've seen the movie. No, I was just trying to get the script. But in the meantime, he thought they were his aunt and uncle when really they were just.
I was under the impression that he called him aunt and uncle knowing that his parents had died and they were his relatives.
Okay.
But I figured he must have been adopted because his parents didn't have relatives.
Okay. Well,
so he shouldn't have had any biological aunts or uncles.
Yeah. It would have been confusing if he'd studied his family tree. At least Darth Vader. You know, done like ancestry tests.
I'm honestly not sure if you understand this at all.
Not really. But, you know, I'm also not too worried about this shit. You know,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
At the end of the day, Darth Vader was his dad, frankly. You know.
Frankly.
Yeah, we're going to be...
We're going to be frank, yeah. We're going to be frank.
Now, Stu, you have been on the scene, along with myself, about Stan Lee's appearance at the recent con the weekend, last weekend. There was the hashtag Weekend at Stan's became operational when Stan had lost all his trademark sparkle, was exhausted all con. He had the guy over the top of him, Stu, saying Stan Lee, S-T-A-N-L-E-E.
Yeah, so there's been a few reports that came out over the last week with Stan Lee. The first of which was his appearance at a Comic-Con, where he was sitting at a table, as he usually does, signing autograph after autograph.
Sure, and taking the photos.
Yeah, but this was just autograph tables.
Sure.
The reports say that he'd been there for hours, like six, seven plus hours in the day.
95 years of age.
So that's taxing on anyone.
Yep.
But at the end of this, there were a few different people that had GoPros running to capture everything at the con. And they brought objects up to Stan to sign, and he was signing them, but he had a helper next to him, an assistant, that was literally spelling out Stan's name.
Yeah.
And at one point I saw him, he was signing, and he'd run off the item, and he was just signing on paper.
Right.
And they actually had to pick his hand up and put it back.
So he really was kind of out of it.
Yeah. Like, he looked like what you would expect someone who'd just come out of a major surgery.
Sure.
Like, just doped up to the eyeballs on painkillers or something.
Poor guy.
And I think it was largely exhaustion, because he'd been there for hours in that day.
And you can't be here 25
Both years. Physical and mental exhaustion. When you're 95 and you've got to sit there for 8 hours and sign...
I'm 43 and I'm mentally exhausted. Fucking hearing about this.
I know, it's tough. So there was another article that came out that accused the people around Stan...
The Hollywood Reporter article.
It came out in the Hollywood Reporter.
Major article that I read during the week, actually.
Yeah. That points towards Stan's immediate group of associates basically committing a form of elder abuse.
Yeah.
These people are working in conjunction with his daughter, JC.
Who's always been a sponge.
Yeah, and it's been acknowledged plenty of times that she has no capability of controlling financial matters.
She's a spender with a fucking credit card.
Yeah.
That's it.
Serial shopaholic.
She'd be what I'd be if I was Stan Lee's. Yeah. I wouldn't have the stupid business decisions, but I'd definitely make the fucking weird purchases.
Mm-hmm.
David bought a Tyrannosaurus Rex. Yeah. With Stan Lee's money.
He's gone full Nick Cage. Yeah. So, there are three people that are named in the article. And they are all kind of transferring assets from Stan into JC's name.
That's what scares me big time.
And
that's when the lawyers can get involved too, because if he's not signing it fully compos mentis, then it might not be legally binding.
Well, clearly we've seen videos that he's not capable of signing his name.
Yeah.
Like, in all conditions anyway. So
it feels like he's surrounded by yes men who are also parasites and leeches.
You know? Yeah.
It's sad.
So there's a bunch of weird stories going on that they're transferring assets away from him, and they're kind of giving him misleading information, so he thinks it's a good idea to do so.
And they're feeding him, everyone's against you, stand there turning on you, you know.
Yeah, and then in the last couple of days, Stan put out a video.
Which we watched just before this.
Which we watched. It was sold to TMZ in America.
Was it really sold to TMZ? Are you serious?
Yeah.
That really is kind of grotty in itself, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's the level of... That's where we are as a society, though. It's where we're such a low level, man. So I didn't realise that. I thought he just put that up on his website or something. But it was actually sold. So they're fucking constantly nickel and diming, aren't they?
Yeah, all the time.
That pisses me off. And even that Stan just kind of goes off on a rant, basically.
Yeah, it's an odd rant because he never repeats himself. He never stutters, which makes it seem to me like it was scripted and he was reading off cue cards.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Which
is the end of the world in itself.
No, the statement that he puts out on his own behalf.
Fucking Sinatra sang to fucking karaoke monitors the last 10 years of his career, you know?
Yeah, in this video he's basically saying that reports of elder abuse are dramatically overstated,
sure,
that he's going to sue people for slanderous information and spreading misinformation.
Did you like that? A bit of fire in his guts, Jim?
See, I don't think it was... Like, you seem to think this is a good thing. I think this is a terrible thing.
No, stupid. Don't crucify me for my comments. I just thought it was good to see Stan had a bit of get up and go rather than kind of like just a drone signing. I thought I liked that he was kind of firing a few shots. You know, at that age, man. Like... He had a bit of get up and go about it. And yeah, he's hugely misguided, but I mean, I just like that he had a bit of life about it. But no, it's terrible. Like, I think he's being fed false information. I think he's being led down the garden path by people he trusts who are bleeding him dry. That's what I think.
Yeah, he mentions Kia Morgan by name.
Sure.
And she actually owns this video. It was copyrighted to her.
Mm.
So she profited by selling it to TMZ, Stan.
I hate that she's done that.
Whether she gave any money to Stan because of it, we don't know.
Yeah.
It
just goes to show me how much they're bleeding off him.
But it just seems like more evidence of people, especially Kia Morgan, who are now controlling Stan and what he can produce.
Oh, I 1,000% agree, Stu. Don't get me wrong, mate. I just like the fact that he had a bit of life about him. But no, the actual reality of what's happening, I think, is shameful. One thing I did like, Stu, I want to say God bless Tom McFarlane this week. He went and visited Stan. And this is a guy who's got nothing to gain from Stan Lee. Like, he's not grinding Stan Lee for dollars. He went to see him just visiting an old friend. You know, because Tom McFarlane worked the Marvel for a long time. He went and formed Image. He's a hugely successful man in his own right. He's had his fair share of controversies and problems over the years, too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He walked in. There's a video of them on the couch. He's chatting to Stan. Stan looks kind of half in, half out of life. But he appreciates it. And Todd's just basically checking to see how his friend's doing because he's heard all these reports. And you know, I get the feeling, like, what can Todd McFarlane do? But at least he went and checked in on him. You know what I'm saying, Stu?
Yeah, because there was a few weeks there where no one had seen or heard from him, and they were seriously worried about his health.
And this was just prior to, I believe, the con.
Yeah.
And, look, Stan's not in best health. He doesn't look in best health on Todd McFarlane thing. And he said he was saying that they were just chatting about old things, like... I like that someone who hasn't got anything to gain... Because the problem is, Stu, all these white knights that want to ride in... Stan thinks they're all white knights, but really half of them, or more than half of them, are thieves and con men, dude. We're talking about fucking LA, the Hollywood entertainment industry. It's not renowned for its integrity, you know? And I also like that Kevin Smith offered that Stan can come and live at his house. I mean, a childish offer, it seems, but I also just like the simple simplicity of it.
It's a bit of a weird offer, though, isn't it?
It is a weird offer,
yeah.
And it's never going to be accepted. It's one of those offers you make knowing full well that it's never going to be accepted. You know what I mean? Because Stan probably is very comfortable at home. What I wish would happen, Stu, two things. And I was talking to some people who I won't even mention inside the industry. I was saying I wish that Disney or Marvel, I said this on the show last week, would get lawyers in and siphon off these people.
Yeah.
And put stuff in, you know, like they were saying conservation, I think it's called. Mickey Rooney had a lot of problems like this as he got old. People bleeding his assets dry. You know, and what generally happens, Stu, is the wife dies. And, like, the wife who's kind of been your guardian at times of your business affairs, and certainly was with Stan Lee, they die, and then all the parasites have an open door. And that's what happened to Mickey Rooney, and it's what's happened to Stan Lee. But But anyway, that's not going to happen. Disney and Marvel are going to keep a million miles away from this mess. So sadly, that won't happen.
But look, Disney and Marvel now don't owe Stan. Like, he was paid for the work he did.
It's not like it's their charge
to go in and save him.
Of course not.
Like, you could argue the same for literally any large company. Why aren't you saving Stan Lee?
I agree. And that's what I'm saying. Look, it's not going to happen.
And honestly, there's also a bit of pride in there. Like, Stan wouldn't want everybody on the planet offering him charity.
Mm. But I think a lot of people do feel this way. Because
a lot of people would. There's thousands of people around the world that would gladly fund a Kickstarter or something like that to hire one of the world's best lawyers for... You know, whatever they need to do.
The problem is Stan's not poor, but they're bleeding him dry, so the estate's not going to have the cash when he passes away.
But ultimately, Stan is still in his right mind.
Yeah, just though, I think. Just.
And unfortunately, he's well within his rights to do everything he's doing, and he's choosing to do so.
So you feel he's, like a car-crushing action?
Well, no, he's choosing to trust the wrong people.
Yeah.
And it's basically like a business mistake. It's going into a partnership with the wrong person who then screws you over and you end up broke because of it.
And I was saying, you know, I agree with you. And I was saying to you, people forget this. In the 90s, I remember, Stan Lee had a long history of failed businesses. Do you know what I mean? Stan Lee's history is littered with failed businesses.
Yeah, when he left the comic book industry and started trying to do his own thing, he had a string of weird TV shows.
Yep,
which get weird repeats now at like midnight on an off channel.
And also like really hokey pokey comics that went nowhere as well.
Yeah, he kind of struggled to find his feet for a while there.
He's had a halo effect. If we can be honest, he's had a halo effect by these Marvel movies and people have sort of like... He's kind of America's grandpa. He's kind of like the nerd's grandpa.
Well, yeah, once he'd gotten past that certain age where he went from being successful into creepy...
Yeah.
Now he's passed the creepy into the kind grandfatherly
role. Of course, yeah.
Because, let's be honest, anyone in their, like, 60s that's left the main scene and is now trying to leech on other people, they go into a bit of a creepy phase.
And to be honest, I remember, Stu, you know I'm older than you, when I was in the middle of the 80s, like, Stan Lee was always Stan Lee. He was always, like, this older hustler guy, always rabbiting on about Spider-Man, and you kind of were like, who is this guy? Like, he's cool, but it was a weird middle period for him in his career.
Yeah.
But, hey, look, Stan...
And his previous business managers really helped him out, because they got him onto the cameos, the Marvel appearances, which led to him getting an increased bump in appearance fees.
They made him realise, Stan, you don't need to create another Spider-Man. You created Spider-Man.
Yeah, exactly.
Your marketing is now yourself. Like, when Kevin Smith put him in Mallrats, that was huge.
Yeah.
He put him in Mallrats... And some people went, well, this Stan Lee, he's really something. He's really got something.
But he doesn't need to... Yeah, he's made enough characters that he can live on that. And he is now himself a character.
Exactly. And literally, in the sense of the Marvel movies. You know?
Well, yeah, exactly. So...
But, Stu, do you... I mean, my final point on this is, I just wish... This is what I wanted to say. I think at his age, and with his problems and everything else, he deserves now to be sitting in the garden and just chilling out. He needs to be taken off the treadmill. I feel like Stan Lee's... It's kind of like... He's a ball player who's played, like, three seasons too long. You know, it's kind of, like, kinder to let him go. I honestly think he needs some space and time and just to be allowed to rest. And, hey, if that means that he passed away because, you know, he doesn't need it anymore, he passed away, we all pass away, Stu. We all go to dust in the end, you know? Like, I just...
I mean, I feel like Stan Lee is hardwired to make money, though.
Sure.
I don't think he would want to sit around in a home...
You're saying he'd sell tickets to his funeral, basically.
But, yeah, he's the guy that wants to be out there signing things. Like, he doesn't want to be sitting at home spending money when he could be out there making money.
Sure.
And I think that's hardwired in someone like him.
Yeah. And, I mean, a lot of people, they say when they give it away, that's when the old person dies. Like, often when the spouse dies, they die as well. So many spouses, like, long-term married partners who've been somewhere...
Absolutely, yeah.
They pass away. And part of it is they no longer live. I think the thing with Stan is he loves to still be out there making a buck. And I think that's how they get in his head, these...
Exactly, yeah.
They go, come on, Stan, we can still make some more money.
Yeah.
Really, if Stan thought about it, does he need more money at that age?
No, but that's never a thought that's going to cross his mind.
No, he's just constantly hustling.
It's the same as someone like Bill Gates. Bill Gates could have stopped as soon as he made his first billion.
Sure.
Sat back and gone, well, I can now buy my own island, live on it for the rest of my life, happily, and never want for another thing, ever.
Yeah.
No, yet he's gone on to make another $100 billion.
Exactly. It's in their DNA. So.
Like right now, he has more money than anyone would ever need. He's wealthier than countries. And he's still working every day.
Yeah. No, I know.
There are some people that just...
I love cash, but I would get to the point where I would be sort of like... I'd rather disappear into my own pleasure spiral. You know what I mean?
And a lot of people are like that. A lot of people are like that.
So like, I'd be like, okay, if I was Bill Gates, I would have created the Oasis so long ago. I'd be living in it just ridiculously. But it's all a trap. It's like, I think this a lot. If you hit the big time... I always think of Elvis. Elvis died at 44 with barely a million in the bank, surrounded by leeches. You know? And it's... I always think of Elvis. He just didn't realise that he was surrounded by them. You know? And he lived his career...
I mean, a lot of these people let themselves be taken in. Yeah. They want to believe the best in people, and that's what they do.
Yeah.
They believe that no one could be out there wanting to hurt them or wanting to leech off them.
I'd be so deep inside my gated mansion, Stu, with my tennis courts. I'd let you come over, of course. We'd still do the signal.
Cheers,
but
buddy.
But can you imagine just how suspicious I'd be and paranoid? I'd just be nuts.
And see, it's an easy way to go. Like, it's such an easy trap to fall into where you don't trust anyone.
I barely trust anyone now. But, like, I think that's a better way to go, frankly, than just, like, let all these con men into my house.
I think there's a happy medium somewhere.
There's definitely. And I wouldn't be in the medium. I'd be in the more kind of like, you know.
Yeah.
I'd be starting to go, can we start funding Punishers?
You'd go like full on Howard Hughes, would you?
Yes, yes.
End up in some penthouse.
Yeah.
Bottling every... Yeah.
Because I've always wanted to inject blood into... Have we had this discussion? If I've got the flu and I inject like a shitload of blood into me, does it help? Like blood transfusion?
What, your blood?
No. Like, Howard Hughes was obsessed by blood transfusion. They think he actually got AIDS doing it. They actually think Howard Hughes died of AIDS. That's one of the theories. He was obsessed with getting his blood transfused. Like, so he had huge packs of blood that his Mormon handlers would pump full of... He would constantly replenish his blood, basically.
Well, in a transfusion, it's your blood getting piped out, filtered, and back into you.
Well, I don't know if it was his blood. He had more...
So, and blood doping is when they take samples of your own blood, they let your body recover and build back up levels, and then you inject your own blood back into you.
Can you get someone else's blood, though? Like, fresh, healthy blood? That's what I've always thought. Could I get fresh, healthy blood pumped into me if I've got severe flu? And would it help?
You could. I mean, like, you could always do that physically, but it wouldn't help. Like, there's no benefit to getting blood.
No, just fresh blood, like non... You know,
more your body can only handle a certain amount of blood.
But I thought with the flu, all the blood's all diseased or something.
No.
So it wouldn't help. We've answered the question. That's always the question I've had. But see, I would go down the Howard Hughes route, for sure.
Yeah, I could see that happening. Like a cross between Nick Cage and Howard Hughes is what I'm picturing.
Yeah, I'd have my little adventures out into the world, but like...
Oh, yeah, where you'd haggle with comic book vendors and... Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I know my personality.
But then you go back home and snort cocaine off a T-Rex's skull.
Well, I wouldn't do the drugs, Jim, because I believe that that's the way. I've always felt that's where all the rock stars have got no idea. So I've always had a very moderate thinking of that. I've not done drugs in 25 years. And, like... And I think that as soon as you bring cocaine into the equation, you may as well start burning money.
Oh, definitely. It's a money burn.
Like, and Nick Cage, we would love to have him on the show. He could tell us all about it.
Man, I would love nothing else than to spend a day with Nick Cage. Yeah. I reckon he would be the most fascinating guy to spend time with.
Can you imagine? I think he's awesome, actually, frankly. I really do. I think he's absolutely...
I honestly reckon he'd have some of the best stories in Hollywood.
Sure. I mean, haven't some of the stories in Vegas where he lives... You know, when he rolls around in Vegas in the casino with all those people he hangs around.
Like, there's a bunch of celebrities that you're like, yeah, that'd be cool to hang around with. Yeah. But I imagine most of them are just normal people that you kind of...
Yeah, but some of them are like the Dennis
would Rodman, get boring. And
Cages.
And then, yeah, your Dennis Rodman, your Nick Cage. Like, those guys that have been seen as a little bit wacky, they'd have amazing stories.
And they lived on the edge of it. They're not afraid to live on the edge, actually. They like it out there, I think.
Yeah.
I think Nick Cage actually likes it out there. He's comfortable there.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Stu, you've got some news here. Now that we've gone off,
on the 15th tangent of the show.
What have you got here about? Stu, some news about
I've got a lot of news. So, London had the world premiere, and I use that term very loosely, of Infinity War.
Really?
They had a large constituent of the cast and crew.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the actors walked the red carpet. All of the big names were there. I think they were missing a few if they were filming somewhere else or they had other commitments.
It'd be a big cast, actually, when I think about it.
Oh, massive cast.
I just realised all the Guardians guys as well.
Well, I think there's something like 50-ish named cast members.
You going to see this movie, Sean? You going to catch them in cinemas?
I'm considering it, yeah.
I thought so.
Yeah, the buzz is getting pretty good. So they had all of that cast there. They also had a bunch of tickets that people won and, you know, competition winners and that sort of stuff that got to go. And they showed the first 20 to 25 minutes of the movie.
Oh, they didn't show the whole movie?
No. They are going insane with their spoilers.
That's a big effort to go out with all that hoopla for 25 minutes.
Well, it's 20 minutes of the movie, and then there's a big Q&A with the panel, and the like, it's a meet and greet with some of the actors and this sort of stuff. So it was an event more than it was a movie.
Sure.
Now...
Interesting. Have you heard any reports of what was in the 25 minutes, Stu? Yes.
We know quite a bit of what's in the 25 minutes. It's largely...
Really?
Bulkier versions of what we've seen in the trailer.
Okay, sort of puffed up versions of the trailer.
So Thor meeting the Guardians.
Okay.
Spidey jumping out of the bus and going towards the portal thingy.
The spaceship.
Yeah. Doctor Strange doing his thing. RDJ doing, like, there's bits and pieces that we know happen early on in the film.
Any Wakanda stuff? I read that apparently Bucky and Captain America have. There's a TV spot out there where they meet in Wakanda.
Well, yeah, so there's been a bunch more TV spots that have come out in the last week.
See, I've screened off from
that. Yeah, I'm avoiding what I can.
Okay.
So, outside of this 20 minutes, in which the fans were saying it's amazing,
sure.
But Marvel clearly knew exactly when to stop it.
Sure.
Because we got virtually no spoilers that the rest of the world hasn't seen.
Okay, so they're clever. Basically.
No brand new information, nothing that could ruin a plot.
Okay.
You know, setup mode where you see these characters.
Fair enough, you played the game so long, keep going, you know?
Yeah. And it feels like this is going to be very much spend 3 or 4 minutes in this setting, get to know where the characters are, let them have a conversation, and then move on. Because you've got to service a lot of different stories.
You know, with Guardians of the Galaxy, I went down to a screening of the first, like, or it was like 10 minutes or 15 minutes of Guardians of the Galaxy on IMAX. It was a competition. And I went, a former PA at work got the tickets. We went down there, so it was like 10 or 15 minutes, it was before we did the signal, of the prison scene in Guardians of the Galaxy, and also the scene, it was pretty much the prison scene in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay. I had the similar thing with Winter Soldier.
Cool.
Where he was on the boat, and it kind of ended with him running laps around Falcon at the...
Yeah. At the time, I felt pretty lame. Like, when we got to the 10 minutes, so I was like, okay, time to go home now. I was kind of like, where is my life? You know what I mean? Like...
Yeah.
But, you know, because I like to see the whole thing. You know me, Stu. I don't like to go outside it unless there's a
reason. So anyway, the big news from this 20-minute screening was that when they spoke to some of the actors, almost none of them had the full script.
Right, they're just shooting.
Barely any of the actors, even now, know how the movie ends.
So they haven't seen the final cut of it?
No, none of them have seen the final cut. And as far as we can tell, RDJ and Benedict Cumberbatch were the only two actors to see the full script.
How is Cumberbatch getting this?
Because he has a massive role in this film.
Okay.
And he argued that he needed to see the full script to inform how he...
I actually agree with that.
...interpreted the last third of the movie.
Woody Allen does that sometimes. He only gives the actors their scenes.
Yeah.
I actually think that can hurt. I sometimes think... I'm not an actor over here, but I sometimes...
Well, I think what Marvel was saying is each of these stories are separate and they come together in one point.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they kind of diverge a little bit again.
Yeah.
So you're not aware of what other stories are doing until you meet up with them. So it shouldn't be something that you know.
Fair enough. I mean, that's the argument, you know. Okay.
So it's like the Guardians, when they first meet Thor, they've got no clue how to interact with each other because they've never met each other.
Yeah.
And when they land in Wakanda, the other characters shouldn't know that, oh, Thor's been with them, they're cool.
Yeah.
It should again be a completely, we have no idea how to react to these people. So it kind of makes sense.
They're just playing their cards real close to their chest, aren't they?
They are going heavy on the spoilers this year. They are not letting anything out. Tom Holland is not doing any live interviews, which I found hilarious.
Why, because he's just too loose?
Yeah, he spoiled so many things before.
Yeah.
Well, like in one of his first interviews, he said Spider-Man Homecoming is getting 2 sequels. And everyone was like, well...
It's hardly the end of the world, though.
No, but it was... it's something that Marvel can't announce.
Sure.
And if they can't announce it, they can't grab another headline. They can't get more...
True.
Like, it's just a tiny little blow.
Yeah, because we all know that now, sort of thing.
Exactly. So that was the first time they announced it, and Tom just let that slip out.
See, I don't want spoilers, though, if I can be honest. This is kind of suiting me. Because I don't want spoilers. I don't want to hear, like, at the end of the movie, you know, Chris Evans dies, you know, beheaded. before I walk in. You know, it just annoys me.
Yeah. No, no. Well, and I'm trying to avoid any major spoilers from this point on.
Saying, on the 25th, aren't you, like 10 a.m. or something, aren't you?
Yeah. I'm saying it.
2:45 that day, so I'm going to be offline. To my fans, offline for that day.
Yeah, I'll give you a call at 2:30 and just like fuck you up. Yeah,
just be like Dave.
Yeah,
let's not forget I begged you for Just League in the movie. Like,
yeah, you did. Yeah. Like it was the second or third time I'd seen it.
I'm a chuck.
As you and I are going in, and you're sitting next to me, going, "So what happens at the end?" And I'm like, "No, I'm not telling you.
Why don't you watch the fucking movie?
I'm not going to ruin it for you. Like 2 minutes before it starts."
But I get into that nihilism bit where I'm like, "I just don't care. I just want the information."
Yeah,
yeah, but. Actually, for this one, I want to really enjoy it. Well, that's interesting, Stu. And I mean, we'll, the good thing is we're soon going to have all this information. How far away is it? Like 2 weeks?
Like 10 days? Not even.
Yeah. Okay, so it's next. It's Wednesday week for us, isn't it?
Yeah. So in Australia, we're one of the very few countries that gets it early.
Mm.
So it's the 25th here, which is the 24th in America.
Yeah.
Because we're a day ahead anyway. Yeah.
True.
So we're getting it roughly 3 days ahead of most of the world.
Good.
Because it lines up with our public holiday.
Yep. Now, Stu, you've got some news here about the Fox Disney deal.
Yeah. So the president of 21st Century Fox has...
Is he still under Murdoch or not?
No, well, he owns Fox in general. But this is just the president of 21st Century.
Primary.
Yeah. Film and TV. And he said that the deal should be completed by mid-2019.
Okay.
So, like, he's talking, like, July-ish, August, which is an 18 months after the initial news, which fits in with most people's speculation.
Yep. Well, that's what everyone was saying, was going
to
be 18
months. They were saying 12 to 18 months, and now they're basically saying it's going to be the full 18 months. But this is obviously assuming there's no major delays and setbacks.
Sure.
Like we've seen with the Warner... AT&T merger, which has now been going on for years.
By the way, I've got some breaking news. Natasha has given her top three.
Let's put it in. Put it in right now.
Let's put it in.
This is important.
One, Avengers. Two,
good call.
Two, Doctor Strange.
Okay, all right.
Three, Winter Soldier.
Yep.
And I guess honorable mention, Ragnarok.
I mean, it's interesting that all of us are saying Ragnarok's up there.
Yep.
Winter Soldier is up there.
Oh, but yeah, they keep getting mentioned.
They keep getting mentioned.
Yeah. And she said Avengers as well. I mean, every, you know, it's cool. I mean, I think it's the same sort of stuff cycling to the top, the cream rises.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. So, get back to your story. I just wanted to give her a bit of a shout-out. I like bringing the listeners into the conversations.
Well, that's happened in the last minute, so that is breaking news, if ever there was some.
Hot off the internet. Piping hot.
Piking hot. So, yeah, it looks like this deal's moving ahead pretty smoothly.
Good.
And everything's on track, which is great.
Did you buy the shares that I told you to buy for me and stuff? Did you done all that? Did you sort it all out?
Yeah, I put all my millions into Disney.
You put all your millions into Disney?
Yeah.
I think you're on a safe bet.
Yeah, I'm basically owning Disney now. That's...
Wow. Jeepers creepers,
Jim. Yeah, I'm just under Bob Iger. That's it.
Bob Iger, you're his 2IC.
Yeah. My next move is I'm heading into the direction of Stan Lee. That's what I'm doing. I've heard there's some money to make, so...
Love it. So, I mean, that's good news about the Fox deal. One thing, Stu, that I'm finding fascinating, and we just don't have the insights about which we could get, is how many of the X-Men movies that Fox have in development or are half-made will actually get released. Like your Gambits, your X-Forces, your New Mutants. You know?
So as far as anyone can tell, Fox is running the ship as if nothing was happening. They are, you know, sailing as usual, no changes, run through. Everything that's in production stays in production.
They're acting as if the merger gets called off.
As if this merger doesn't exist at all.
Which is smart.
So what will happen is when the merger does actually happen, so mid-2019, midway through next year, it will be a point of, well, these movies are basically ready to go, release them. These movies are so far along in their production that we may as well keep running. It's not worth losing money.
It's still just a fucking word.
If anything that's not in production at that point, it's completely up to them whether they even leave it on the slate or whether it just gets wiped.
Do you think the existence of X-Force is dependent on Deadpool's box office? A reception, Deadpool 2.
I think we can almost guarantee Deadpool 2 is going to work.
Yeah.
I doubt there's going to be any problems.
You think X-Force is kind of like still going to go?
Yeah, I can't see it not working.
I hope so.
I think the X universe in general is pretty safe, I feel.
Yeah.
Like, that's been a consistent earner.
Yep.
And they've had a pretty good hit rate for good movies out of those earning movies.
Yep.
I feel like Disney's going to be pretty happy to keep those going.
They've had very few financial setbacks.
Yeah, I feel like all Disney's going to try and do is integrate it a little bit more.
Yeah.
In the same way they integrated Homecoming with Iron Man.
I just, like, yeah, I just kind of wonder, like, at what point... I guess we'll find out. I think Fantastic Four is going to be easier to bring to Marvel. I wonder how they're going to handle the X-Men.
See, I imagine Fantastic Four is just going to appear in Marvel.
That's totally what I think.
Yeah. Whereas I think X-Men, because they've got an established cast at this point...
Would they go in separate dimensions?
Yeah, very easily.
Yeah, that's what... And then you can still do crossovers.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one of the brilliant things about Marvel having someone like a Doctor Strange.
Mm.
In that they open up the idea of having multiple realities, multiple universes.
But we solved it.
Yeah, it's such an easy...
Several dimensions. I bet you've never heard that before.
It's such an easy solve to have a character like Benedict Cumberbatch come in,
yeah,
and all of a sudden you can introduce an entire X-Men cast.
Yep. And you can even have them cross over. You can do all sorts of things. You can do Secret Wars.
You could have Avengers vs. X-Men. You can have Secret Wars. You can have all these kind of amazing stories.
That would actually be really cool.
And then have them split up at the end of it and do their own separate things for years at a time.
You can get some X-Men landing up in the regular.
Yeah.
You know, all sorts of things. So you can sprinkle the Avengers with X-Men.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they're going to be introducing more and more magic into this universe.
What a time to be alive when we're just talking about this kind of shit. Yeah, no, it's going to be cool.
It's good. Speaking of good news, Jessica Jones, in the last 2 days, got a renewed for a third season.
Excellent. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's great news. Critically, season two didn't do as well as season one. It got some mixed reviews. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. Yeah. Seriously enjoyed it.
Michelle and I enjoyed it.
So it got greenlit for a third season, which is coming up. And they've kind of released the run order for their Netflix shows.
Mm-hmm.
So Luke Cage is the next up in June 22, which is really quick. That's 2 months and 2 weeks.
I'm looking forward to that.
2 months and 1 week. Yeah. So that's coming up really quickly.
Think about that. That'll be after Solo, Deadpool, Infinity War.
Yeah, Infinity War, we've got Deadpool, we've got Solo, and then like a month later, we've got have Luke Cage.
Cool.
We have Daredevil Season 3,
mm-hmm,
which will be late this year, so November-ish.
Could be Born Again. Based.
Yes. They're looking at Wilson Fisk playing a big role again, which would be really cool. Early 2019, so around February-ish,
mm-hmm,
we're looking at Iron Fist Season 2.
I'm so unexcited for that, but hopefully they do something good.
Well, they've been teasing with Luke Cage that they're going to do a Heroes for Hire thing with Iron Fist.
That will be good.
So those stories are going to be more closely linked, which I think improves both Luke Cage and Iron Fist.
Definitely.
And then... hopefully in mid-2019, mm-hmm, we'll be seeing a Punisher Season 2.
Bring it on. Bring it on. And as we know, there's speculation that it's going to be the Slaver storyline. And there's a lot of stuff going on in the Punisher universe at the moment. There's some casting news and everything like that.
Yeah, so they have begun filming at the moment. So they are right in there.
Dane LeMond for Punisher Body Count's going to be an extra on it as well.
That's very cool.
Yeah, I believe Luke Cage as well. He's an extra as well. So potentially more of these is not announced.
I'm not sure Luke Cage will be an extra.
Luke Cage, yeah.
I think cameo maybe, not extra.
Oh, I don't know. I could be wrong.
Cameo is normally a named role. Extra is like guy sitting drinking coffee in background.
No, that's what Dane does. Dane,
yeah, from but Luke Cage is not just going to be walking in the background in one scene. He's going to be
in it. No, sorry. What I'm trying to say is Dane will be an extra. He's an extra on one of these shows. He's going to be an extra in Luke Cage, is what I'm trying to say.
Right. So, yeah, you said Luke Cage is in Punisher.
No. Dane's definitely in Punisher. Season 2 is an extra. And I believe, potentially Daredevil, I think he mentioned that he was going to be in Luke Cage as an extra. Well, it's pretty cool. Like, all because of a drunken Betty made. Someone made him a bet that he wouldn't do it, and he does it, and yeah, he's picking up steady work, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it would be.
Yeah, no, it's cool. And you're surrounded by Hollywood bull, like these wannabe superstars. He's got a full time job, like you're right. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
And this is just something he's doing on the side, man.
Which is the best way to do it?
Yeah, and you get to standing there, and John Bernthal's right next to you, just chatting and stuff. Like weird shit happens like that, but he says. He's a really funny story that every single time there's someone who thinks it's going to be the big break, and he hops over the line, and the producers say, do not go past this line, do not interact with the actors, do not pitch him anything. There's always some hero who drops.
Yeah.
You know? No, I just think it's really cool that he's involved in that kind of stuff. That's now, Stu, awesome. You've got some news on Jumanji.
Yeah, The Rock in general. He's had a couple of stories this week. First is Jumanji Welcome to the Jungle, Jumanji 2, became the biggest movie for Sony domestically.
Wow.
This week. It overtook Spider-Man, which...
The original Spider-Man?
The original Spider-Man, which was the highest US
award. I love Jumanji. I thought it was a lot of fun.
I thought it was a lot of fun as well.
Yeah.
And The Rock came out on social media to say that Jumanji 3 is in production.
Cool.
And it looks like they're going to be filming it for a Christmas 2019 release.
Well, that makes a lot of sense because this one picked up a ton of money at Christmas.
It was a surprise hit. No one expected it to do that well. People were saying it was going to be good,
but
they didn't expect
this level. If you remember, people originally were criticizing the trailers, I remember. There was a whole furore about Karen Gillan wearing a crop top.
Yeah, and the character kind of makes fun of it in the movie.
Yeah, yeah. I know. Well, what a surprise. The internet outrage was wrong, you know?
Yeah, I mean, look, the internet, I think we outraged for a while on it.
Did we?
I think it was basically just, why do we need a Jumanji reboot?
Did we?
Leave it alone.
But, look, I really enjoyed it, man, actually, to be honest.
Yeah, so did I.
I thought moving it out of a board game into the video sphere was a really brilliant move, you know? Like how the guy, I loved the way the original Xbox guy got sucked into the Xbox, into the Jumanji world.
Yeah.
And was there. And I actually had a thing with Michelle, it was only like a couple of nights ago. I'm sort of sitting there and I go, hey, Michelle, I don't understand what, when, you know how the guy goes, spoilers, the guy goes in from the Xbox and then eventually gets out. So when they sort of, when The Rock and his cohorts, you know, come out at the end.
Yeah.
It's all happy families with the guy who's been there for all that time. But when they went there before they went into the game, it was like a ruined mansion. That old guy came out.
Yeah.
And I was like, how come that old guy's there? Like, does he know about the game? She goes, no, that's just his father, like, traumatized because she's lost his son. And I was like, okay. She's like, just sit down and go to sleep, Dave. You don't think too hard about these things. Because I was like, man, does he have some knowledge? Like, what's going on? And then she said, no, he's the grandpa at the end, and he's all happy families at the end.
Yeah.
Like, it's all happy at the end. And I was like, oh, I can sleep soundly now. Because I had this kind of bizarre, like, what happened to him, where are we sort of thing. Like, late at night, the other night.
It's the same story as the original Jumanji.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Where there were already players playing that got sucked into the game.
Yeah, I understand that, but I understand
that. And then when everyone gets released, they get released back to the point they got sucked into the game at.
Yeah, but it does the Back to the Future thing, where it fixed up. Because in their reality, before he'd come back...
Yeah, they changed time.
They changed time, yeah, that's what I'm saying. And I was kind of getting very kind of like, what's going on there is, who is that old guy? Like, where is this connecting? Is he still lost in the game? That's where I was going. Is there more people still lost in there? And Michelle kind of settled me down.
No, there was only one person lost in the game.
My hot milk.
There was only one person lost in the game.
This is the kind of stuff sometimes that I get a little deep into it, man. And,
all right, so moving on, back to The Rock. So The Rock also came out and said that the Black Adam project...
Oh, Jesus, how long have we heard about this? 10 years? This feels like it predates the DC universe.
He has said that the script has come in and it looks fantastic. And it looks like the movie will go into production in 2019.
Mm.
So he said it's going to go into production next year.
Well, imagine Shazam, now, it will.
Well, it feels to me like they're waiting for Shazam to be released, which comes out early April, like April 5.
If Shazam forms, as I predict, there will be no Black Adam.
Exactly. This is heavily reliant on Aquaman and Shazam holding their own.
It would make a lot more sense to have The Rock in Shazam, because then they can promote that.
I think The Rock makes a better Shazam.
Oh yeah,
like he's actually got the build for it.
I agree, but if we're settling on The Rock being Black Adam, which he was cast a million years ago, and ever since he just carries on about it like every now and then because he remembers he's Black Adam.
But yeah,
I just think like if you just take for granted that whatever his name is, Zachary Levi Shazam, and The Rock is Black Adam, with The Rock's box office, I would have thought he would at least have some role in Shazam, you know, to promote it as a movie.
I mean, he might have a post-credit scene or something tiny that he obviously can't talk about because it needs to be a surprise.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he will.
It makes a lot of sense to have him as a post-credit scene in the same way that, like, the original flopped Green Lantern had Sinestro as the villain at the very end.
Yeah.
it kind of sets up the next.
There was nothing wrong with the actor playing Sinestro. He's a good actor.
Just, no, it was Mark Strong. He's an amazing actor.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, but it was a garbage movie.
Yeah, it was an awful movie. Yeah.
But like they tried to do the right thing, which was set up the sequel at the last post credit scene.
Yeah.
They
didn't just, the garbage fire
they it had. Just didn't. They, like they were never going to get there.
Yeah.
They tried.
Do you think, Stu, that we will see a Black Adam movie in 2019?
I don't think so. I feel like the next two movies, Aquaman and Shazam, both aren't looking great.
Yeah.
Aquaman potentially, but
I think Aquaman could potentially do okay and be okay, but I think
Shazam. But every time we hear something good about Aquaman, it kind of hurts it. Like, we heard there was an amazing test screening.
Yeah.
And yet, literally days after, they went back into reshoots. Like, following that reshoot.
I'm fascinated to see what the movie's so, like. I'm fascinated. We don't know. God knows.
We've got no idea. Yeah.
We're shooting in the dark, really.
I mean, as always, we're hopeful.
Shazam, I think, looks like it's going to be a mess. I've just got a feeling that it's a mess.
The only thing that could help Shazam right now is if they went full-on comedy.
Sure.
If they made fun of the flaws that we're noticing.
Yeah.
And they didn't take themselves seriously.
Yeah, Starsky and Hutch. Remember that movie?
Yeah, yeah, or like a Deadpool.
Yeah.
Where they go self-referential, they go heavy on the comedy.
Yeah.
They could turn it around.
Could do a 21 Jump Street kind of stuff.
Exactly, like a reboot of 21 Jump Street. If they take themselves too seriously and try to make themselves feel like a legitimate superhero movie,
yeah.
It doesn't look like it's going
to
fit.
I've got a movie for you. I wanted to get your opinion. God, what was it called? It was the one with Will Smith where he plays a superhero.
Hancock.
Yeah, did you like that? I kind of dug it a bit, actually.
I'm kind of up and down on Hancock. Every now and again I watch it and I'm like, it's pretty good.
I thought it had some interesting stuff in it.
I'm a big Charlize Theron fan, so
she was
great in it.
Will Smith's good too.
Will Smith's good. I don't know. For me, it's like a B movie.
Definitely B, but I just thought it was interesting. That played around with a lot of stuff. It had some neat ideas in it.
Yeah.
Kind of a drunk and all that, not really, you know, he was...
Yeah, it was a new take on the superhero genre.
He was a bit of a wrecking ball, really.
Yeah, which was very cool, because we hadn't really seen the superhero off the wagon.
No, definitely not. And unapologetic about it, too.
Yeah.
And he was kind of just out of control, without being evil. He was just a bit...
So, I mean, that's the kind of thing that... I mean, honestly, DC needs to just push it. They can't stick with this, what Marvel's been doing in the past.
No.
Because even now, Marvel are changing pretty dramatically compared to what they did in Phase 1. If you look at their Phase 3 movies compared to Phase 1, they're weirder, wackier, weirder directors, their comedy's up there, their action's up there.
The thing of the Captain Marvel, that just sounds so fucking interesting from what little we know. And compare that to the Shazam movie, and you're like, what is going on with the Shazam movie? We don't know anything.
Yeah, exactly.
The idiot's in a big suit. That's all. You know, and Zachary Levi's having a cry on the internet.
Yeah, and see, the fact that he's having a cry on the internet makes me feel like they're not going down the comedy road. Because if he was going to the comedy road, he wouldn't say anything. He would just be sitting back going, this is going to be hilarious when all these internet trolls come and see the movie and realize that we're laughing at it the same as them. They're going to love this shit.
I thought that was one of the most hilarious things I've seen ever. That Zachary Levi, like, did a little cry.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, I know he will have his fans, but outside of his fans, everyone else is laughing at him. You know?
I think he's a fine actor.
He's okay.
He's okay, sure, but he doesn't fit.
Can you imagine Harrison Ford having a cry like that online? Do you know what I mean?
Kind of, yeah. It's funny.
Yeah, he would never do it, man. Like, that's... I honestly think part of that is Zachary Levi has built a career where he is super connected to his fan base. And, you know, he's had a lot of praise for it. He's always had a lot of nerd love because of Chuck and stuff. And he runs these kind of, like, comic book seminars and stuff, and like he had this big business plan, Stu, with cons in the States where they have like kind of a rec room kind of thing and people can plug their fucking, you know, iPads in and like chill back in bean bags. Like, seriously, this is the kind of shit he does.
Yeah,
and,
but I mean, he's made a successful career out of that.
It's all very catering to an audience, and now the audience, the mass audience, are going, this is ridiculous, and he's having a big cry. I just find it funny, really, you know.
I feel like he's giving out mixed messages at this point. Like, if he's all for the comic book community, why is he not just listening to them and going back to the movie studios and going, hey, this doesn't look right. We need to change some shit.
Why not just shooting the movie and not even doing any of this bullshit? And like,
I mean, the studios... And this is a massive difference between Disney and some of the other movie studios.
Yeah.
It is so rare that Disney gets footage leaked that it's not in control of.
Sure, yeah.
Incredibly rare. Like, they control everything. The fact that the scripts weren't released to the actors,
yeah,
and that when they were on tablets that were thumbprint recognised.
I think you could almost be fired off a Marvel movie for doing what Zachary Levi did, frankly.
Oh, well, first off, you would be. You would also be sued.
Yeah.
But Marvel would also insist the internet got rid of it. They would sue anyone and fine anyone that posted it online.
Yeah.
We've seen trailers, like the original comic book Infinity War trailer that came out at Comic-Con.
That guy with the phone, yeah.
That guy with the phone.
You're right.
That got taken down so many times from so many sites. Like, it's out there. It was impossible to get rid of because it's such a big movie.
All over the place, yeah.
But it was a struggle to find it.
I don't know, sometimes you've got to go too far. I sometimes think it's wiser to get that stuff out there, but that's just my opinion. But they're Disney, they do what they like.
Yeah, I mean, Marvel plans this stuff out, like, months in advance.
Yeah.
They know what to leak when and what the outcome's going to be. I mean, there's a news item coming up that I think they may have made a mistake this week.
Really, sure.
A very rare mistake.
Rare mistake.
But I think they might have made one mistake.
You've never pulled me up on anything like that. You just haven't made a mistake yet.
You're perfect, Dave.
Thanks, Jim.
You're perfect. That's why I love you.
As I apply deep heat to my aching back during this show.
Yeah. As Dave tries to crumble on me during show.
Can you imagine me signing for 9 hours? I simply can't imagine staying awake for that long. Like...
I can picture you going, just send the shit to me and I'll sign it here.
Yeah, fuck this.
I'll do it in my own time.
Yeah. I get the assistance. Okay, you start doing something.
Or I'll sign it, but it'll cost you $25 and a sandwich. Yeah.
No one's taking
my money. By the way, no offers on that? No.
There's been a few mentions.
Oh, really?
And one guy, Adam Crouch, shout out to Adam, said if I was in Australia, I'd definitely take up on the offer. So thank you, Adam.
Oh, I feel sorry for Adam now.
Yeah, good on Adam.
Because he's not got much going on in his life. He's spent $25 and a sandwich.
He wanted to have $25 and a sandwich with me and, you know, some stories. So he's kind of penciling in, but I notice he's doing the if I lived in Australia.
Yeah. Oh, you should fly him out here, Dave. You're rolling in cash now.
Oh, I've got plenty.
Just fly him out here for $25 and a sandwich meal.
And a story.
And a story, yeah.
The story.
Yeah.
So this happened to me today. So on the train today. There was this guy with his headphones just too loud.
Classic Dave.
So, Stu, yeah. I mean, look, we'll see. Now, what's this about the Russo brothers, Stu? What's happening?
So the Russo brothers made a comment about the Black Order, and in specifically Ebony Maw.
This is your area, isn't it? You are Mr. Black Order over there.
I love this stuff. This is all cosmic stuff.
Tell me, what happened?
So, Ebony Maw is being played by Tom Vaughan Lawler. A hyphenated surname, so you know he's fancy. Who's not a massively known actor. I looked through his IMDb, he's done like a single episode of a couple of TV, like Peaky Blinders, he was on one episode.
Sure. So he's just done.
Yeah, he's not a well-known actor, by any means. Now, according to the Russo brothers, he's going to be the one holding the Black Order together,
mm-hmm.
which traditionally was Corvus Glaive, who leads the Black Order.
Right.
So they're changing it up a little bit, and they described him as Thanos' hype man / herald.
Okay, so sort of like, you know, I get what they're saying. Now, where are you on this issue? Because you are Mr. Black Order. Does this trouble you, or is this okay?
No, I mean, they've made changes already. The character that is Black Dwarf in the comics has been changed to Cull Obsidian. They've changed the name.
Right.
There's a couple of characters they're not including in the movie that exist in the comics.
But they're going for the general ambiance.
There's a few minor character changes. Not a problem. I think this fits Ebony Maw better, actually.
Okay.
Because...
What's his power? Tell me his power. What does he
do? Mind control, manipulation.
Okay. Could come up against Scarlet Witch, couldn't he? Isn't that kind of like
a... Scarlet Witch is going up against Corvus Glaive.
What is his power?
The typical super strength, speed, blah, blah, blah. He also has...
Got the thing out of someone's head, Vision's head.
That's Corvus Glaive.
Okay. So Corvus Glaive's in there, though. Your man's in there somewhere.
Yeah. Cool. We've seen him before.
Cool.
But Ebony Maw doesn't go into a battlefield and attack people physically. Like, he's never that kind of guy. He's the one that skirts around the outside...
More metaphysical, he looks over the...
Yeah, and controls people. Okay. So, I like the fact that he's taking a more of a commanding role in the Black Order in the movies.
Yep.
He's always been low-key my favourite Black Order member.
Oh, he's one of your favourites, is he?
Absolutely, I love him. Okay. He's so creepy.
Okay. All right. Okay.
And he looks a lot like Voldemort
how
in this movie.
How is he in terms of a powerless to say like a Thor or a Loki?
Physically.
Yeah.
He'd get destroyed.
So it's more mental, his power.
Absolutely.
But is Loki have the...
Like he is built like a really frail, skinny old man.
Right, okay.
You often see him wearing like a business suit in the comics.
Right, okay.
The other guys are they're the muscle, they're the brute, they're the military might.
Okay.
He does the mind control, the tricky...
Strategist kind of thing.
Kind of like a Doctor Strange.
Okay, yeah.
Like, useless if you punch him in the face,
is
but...
Is he the one who's going up against Strange? When he's got Strange in that kind of net thing that's in the trailer?
Looks like it, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So it looks like he's going after the time gem.
Sure.
The other thing they mention, which everyone's kind of forgotten about, is that Peter Dinklage is in the movie, and people will recognise him after a beat or two.
Will he be playing the same character that he played in Days of Future Past?
No, he won't be playing Oliver Trask, I think was his...
I loved him in that movie. I thought it was great.
I love him in pretty much everything. He's great.
Love him.
So, the speculation is that he won't be doing, like, a CGI where he's just a voice.
Okay.
If people are going to recognise him, it's not going to be just a voice.
Okay.
So, he is playing a character in this movie.
You don't know who? A baddie, or...?
They haven't said anything.
Potentially a baddie.
It seems really, really, I don't know, obvious and potentially non-PC.
Sure.
But...
You're going with the Black Dwarf guy. Yeah.
No. Cull Obsidian is a CGI character.
Oh, okay. Right.
I think he's going to be playing one of the dwarves.
Okay. What dwarves?
Thor makes a new hammer.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
The ones that made Mjolnir.
Well, why not? Wouldn't that fit?
I feel like it. I don't know whether people are going to be okay with...
Fuck people.
Like Peter Dinklage playing a character called a dwarf.
Good question. Is Peter Dinklage okay with it? Is he taking the money to play the role? I'm sure if he...
Well, we don't know. We don't know if he's...
I'm just saying, if he does that, then... Who else is to complain about it?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, like, if he's choosing to take that role...
I'm not saying that. I'm saying that my speculation that he's playing a dwarf is a little bit non-PC.
Well, I'm not offended, it's true.
I know you would be, yeah.
I already said Black Dwarf. I thought you were dancing around the topic.
Well, no, I already said Black Dwarf isn't in the movie. Like, they've changed his name to Cull Obsidian.
Oh, I see.
Okay. They no longer have any character called Black Dwarf.
But, Stu, I mean, I hate to say this, but... He, in the politically correct fucking landscape we learned last week, he's a little person in real life.
He is.
So whatever character he plays becomes a little person character. But, I mean, there's nothing to say he could play whoever. And then, he could play the original Captain Marvel, but Captain Marvel would then be, a midget version of Captain Marvel, is all it means.
Well, kind of. I mean, like Bolivar Trask in the X-Men universe... Is like a 6 foot tall guy.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Peter Dinklage is playing this role. This is a character that is now the same height as Peter Dinklage.
Yeah.
And then no one went, oh, I'm upset.
Yeah, it doesn't mean.
Literally everyone just went, okay, but I don't care enough.
Or that's... he can just go for total type and he can play a dwarf. You know?
Yeah, which.
He can generally play dwarves anyway. He likes time bands and stuff like that.
Well, if you look at. What's his name in Star Wars constantly?
Warwick
Davis.
Yeah.
Warwick Davis has typically only ever played characters that are like dwarves or Ewoks or...
Yeah. All that kind of stuff.
Yeah, whatever he does is always...
Because of his height.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know. Like, there's no...
But Peter Dinklage has tried to push out to just a general role.
Yeah.
He doesn't really play characters...
No.
That are written as dwarves. Written as little people in scripts.
Maybe he's decided that he's going to flip up the script on this one a little bit.
I think the only time he has, really has taken one of those roles is Game of Thrones.
Which is great.
Because Tyrion is like a...
But frankly, and this is going to sound kind of big from me, but, like, do you not think that by him taking that role on, he's kind of, broken that stereotype down? He's shown that, because the character of Tyrion Lannister isn't just the story of, a midget. It's a massive character. He's a great character.
No, because it's written that way.
I don't know. But
he hasn't really done anything with the character that... He's actually dialed it down quite a bit from what's in the books.
Has he? Okay, I've read the books. I don't know, man. I just get impressed by... My point is, I'm impressed by his acting, just in general. I think he's just a really good actor.
Yeah, and I think the problem is you don't want to stereotype and typecast someone like Peter Dinklage in He Can Only Play a Dwarf.
Oh, no.
And I'm assuming, because of his height, that he must be playing a dwarf. Because that's all he can play in this movie.
Well, and we're speculating, Stu, and don't worry. You're...
Like, as far as I can tell, that's one of the only places...
The reason we have a fucking show is to speculate some of this shit.
It's one of the only places that I know of that's going to be in this movie. We know there are characters called dwarves in this movie.
So are you putting...
And they're not CGI.
Are you putting...
So I think everything fits.
Well, put it this way. If they're not CGI... And there are dwarves in the movie. Well, midgets will be playing the dwarves. If it's not him, other midgets.
Well, I mean, look at Lord of the Rings. They didn't have a midget playing the dwarf Gimli.
But I don't really like
you could pretty easily have a race of people.
I'm going to say this. I think that's taking roles away from the midgets. Frankly. I'm going to be honest. I don't know if that's politically correct.
Yeah, it's not. It's really not.
Well, anyway. Well, enough of this topic. We seem to be obsessed with this fucking podcast. With fucking midgets, little people, whatever you want to call them. I'm supportive
of them. I think fucking midget is a really nice term for them. That's great.
I'm supportive of them, and I do like... If there are dwarves in movies, I generally like the dwarves to play by midgets because I think it gives them the roles, because they're midget actors who need these roles. You know,
I think the argument is that what you're saying is they can only play those roles.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying
because they can't get a role as a normal character.
I'm saying, what's his name? Peter Dinklage just showing that, like, when he played Oliver Trusk or whatever, he did a really good job. I'm supportive of them, but I wonder if society says they're so supportive, but I don't see a lot of movies starring midgets playing non fucking midgets. Like, I don't see it a lot.
Well, I mean, there's not a lot of little people that go into acting. Like, full stop.
Okay. There's a couple, though. There's Mini-Me. There's one.
Vernon Troyer, yeah. There's
that guy from Bad Santa.
Yeah, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but...
That guy's in the Seinfeld episode who does a shitload of stuff. You know, the one who says, you're wearing lifts, and he attacks, you know, Kramer's buddy. He's in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, but a lot of people in that scenario get typecast so early on in their careers... Okay. That it's kind of a really bad influence. It's a really bad experience for them.
Stu, we're not going to change the world, so let's not try. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we're raising our fucking flag here, but, like, I don't delude myself that Hollywood's going to spin around and start casting them in fucking everything. Like, you know, maybe, but I doubt it. They've still got a long way to go with Latino representation, let alone midget representation. You know, don't get me started on Wesley Snipes. Now, okay, where are we, Stu, in the news? I think I've set my views.
I think you've set it up for everyone. Yeah.
Parliament now?
Yeah, maybe. Joaquin Phoenix was asked in an interview this week whether he's playing the Joker.
Oh, really? What did he say?
He said, I'm not going to answer that question.
Yes, that's a yes.
He basically refused to confirm or deny. So
he likes fucking with people, though. He likes fucking with people.
He was then asked... If you were to play the Joker, are you intimidated by Heath Ledger's portrayal of the Joker?
Okay, that's a fairly intrusive question, but what did he say to that?
Basically, he said that people thought Heath Ledger would be intimidated by Jack Nicholson's Joker.
That's exactly right.
And he wasn't. He did something completely different, and he did it well. If I took on this role, I wouldn't be doing Heath Ledger's Joker. Exactly. So, no, I'm not intimidated in the slightest.
Good answer.
Exactly.
And Joaquin Phoenix can act. He's got miles under his belt.
He can.
Yeah, and very good point. Jack Nicholson, people forget, was huge as a Joker. He was an enormous...
Oh, influence. Yeah, and people were saying, can't be topped.
And I thought...
When Heath Ledger was cast, there was internet hatred.
We're Aussies, so we knew a bit more about Heath Ledger than your mainstream Hollywood groups.
Yeah.
I knew Heath Ledger had acting chops. I'd seen him, you know, the Australian movie Two Hands, I think it's called? He's fantastic in it. Do you remember it?
I don't know.
He had a movie, an Australian...
But I mean, he was big in Japan. Like, he'd done Knight's 10 Tale. Things I Hate About You, and he'd done Knight's Tale, and... Like, he had done quite a few major movies before Dark Knight.
And go on and watch...
Brokeback Mountain came out not long before Dark Knight as well.
Did you know, wasn't he Oscar nominated for...
I don't think so.
Well, it was a good movie, though.
The movie might have been, but I don't think he was.
Heath Ledger was a good actor. And when he blazed his own trail... it's very sad what happened to Heath Ledger. It still breaks my heart a little bit. But I think Joaquin Phoenix, if he takes this role, will go his own crazy wild way, which Joaquin Phoenix does.
Yeah, and we're all hoping that it's not the same crazy way that Jared Leto does.
Jared Leto is in a shadow of Joaquin
Phoenix. I mean, I like the idea that he tried to do, which was, I can't do Heath Ledger. I need to do something very different. And he did do something very different.
It just sucked. In a bad movie.
It was just a way that didn't work in a movie that wasn't great. And he was doing weird things behind the scenes, which didn't help.
Exactly.
So it was a kind of combination of a bunch of things that turned it into
him.
A bad performance.
It wasn't just him. I don't believe the rumours that, like, he's got this great movie on the cutting floor either. I thought Jared Leto was passable at best in that movie.
Look, I mean, I'll say the more I saw of his scenes and, like, deleted scenes and extended scenes,
yeah.
the more I thought the movie improved.
Sure.
But it wasn't improving to a massive hit.
Yeah.
It was improving to a watchable movie.
Fair enough, man. That's interesting, though. I think Joaquin Phoenix. I think I was listening to John Schnepp on Collider Heroes today. He says he believes his sources are telling him ink is dried. Joaquin Phoenix is playing him. It's locked. You know, like
I mean, most people are saying that
account kind of thing. You know,
yeah.
The question is just going to be: will Todd Phillips direct? And is Scorsese at all involved?
Well,
Scorsese,
I feel like they're waiting for. The Batman to kind of sort itself out first.
Jesus, they could be waiting a while.
Because I feel like we need to have a Batman before we can have a Joker.
Yeah, I agree.
They're considering pushing on with just a solo Joker film.
Well, what about this, though?
But I don't think it works without having any Batman.
What about this, where they have either very limited Batman just in the mask, or at the end of the Joker movie, they kind of invert the end of Dark Knight, where you see the Bat signal come up at the end. Like at the end of Dark Knight, you know, when he...
You could run with it in a similar vein to what Suicide Squad did, where you only had a couple of brief glimpses of Batman.
Yeah.
And they mentioned the Bat quite a bit.
Yeah.
That's fine. Like, you could run with that level of
interaction. But if it's the ending of Joker, you don't desperately need Batman.
Oh, but the Joker started in response to a Batman. There was no Joker before there was Batman.
Killing Joke. If you took Killing Joke, okay, just not the crippling of Barbara Gordon, but the thing how he's the spouse of comedian and stuff, that's not relying on the Bat.
No, I think Joker gets more interesting the more crazy he goes.
Maybe Batman in the scene where he's running away from Batman, but you wouldn't necessarily need to show Batman without his cattle. It could be anyone playing Batman, to my point.
Yeah, they always try to keep the bat suit consistent across iterations.
But I'm just trying to think about ideas that maybe they're not connected. That's what people are saying, that potentially this might be a non-connected movie.
See, I don't think that's going to happen. I think they really want this to be connected. They want it to be part of this inclusive universe.
But the problem is then, Stu, that like Joaquin Phoenix, does Joaquin Phoenix want to do multiple Joker movies? This is a guy renowned. This is a guy renowned for, you know.
I think you're a little easier to cast a villain because you can have a one-off villain.
Sure.
We've seen that plenty of times in great Marvel movies, where a villain is there for one movie, and then the sequel, that villain is in Arkham Asylum, in Blackgate, wherever.
But imagine if Matt Reeves...
I mean, look at Dark Knight and Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah.
Like, Dark Knight had the Joker. Dark Knight Rises, Joker's still in that universe.
But the Joker didn't die. Would have had the Joker if Heath Ledger hadn't died.
Exactly, but you don't need to have the Joker in that movie for it to be work.
But, I'm saying...
Matt Reeves could very easily cast Joaquin Phoenix for a single movie... Mm. If it works really well, look into going to a second and third or fourth movie with him.
Hmm.
But if scheduling conflicts come up, you can go, okay, well, don't put you in the third, we'll put you in the fourth.
Hmm. Yeah, okay.
Like, we can have them come in and out. This is a Batman universe. And villains are constantly cycling through Arkham and through Blackgate.
Joaquin Phoenix has done major pictures before. I mean, he did movies like Walk the Line, Academy Award winning. You know, he's a very gifted actor. I mean, he's a get for any project.
For sure.
If you get his head screwed on and he's in the right mental space, he's a little bit of a loose cannon.
Yeah.
That's the thing with Joaquin Phoenix. He's very loose.
Yeah.
And, you know, but money talks, Stu. And if he's being paid $40 million, he might turn up for three movies. You know, money does talk in Hollywood. You know? Maybe he thinks, I've done enough independent bullshit that no one's been watching. I need to get back in front of people, movies that people actually watch.
I mean, this gives him an opportunity to do this movie, move into some indie projects for a year or two, and then come back. Exactly. He doesn't have to do consecutive films. And he can miss one or two.
He's not going to be in every Batman movie. He might be in
You wouldn't want him in every Batman movie.
Dude, I fucking want
that. It's a cycle of villains. You kind of want to have a movie with Joker, and then maybe one where... Two-Face or Penguin or any of the other amazing villains, Scarecrow,
Riddler
picks up a lead role, and then you have one or two of those.
You can go next level on stuff that we haven't seen before. Cop King, people that we haven't...
Mad Hatter would be cool. Victor Zsasz, I'm always low-key loving Victor Zsasz.
Oh, I'm down for Victor Zsasz. There's so many in Batman's Rogue Gallery that you can do that are genuinely, like, cool.
Yeah. But bring the Joker back in every three or four Condiment King. Yeah, that's a deep dive.
Chuck actually says he loved doing Condiment King.
Who wouldn't?
Yeah, he was just a lot of fun. He was in the Harley comics I was reviewing recently, and at the end of it, he's reformed and he's just in a restaurant. He's happy as a clam. Just with his condiments. What I love about Condiment King, he literally just had sauce in those things.
Yeah.
He's just a nuisance.
Yeah.
Like, no more than that.
You can barely call him a villain.
Yeah, he's just
a... He's more of like a graffiti artist. That's about the level of... all right, so this next story I love.
Mm.
Fandango, who manage early pre-sale tickets in the US,
yep.
Released a statement saying that Avengers Infinity War is currently selling twice as many tickets as Black Panther was 2 weeks out.
Wow.
So at the same stage, like 10 days, 2 weeks before the movie...
Doesn't surprise me.
Avengers is now selling twice as many tickets as Black Panther was. And Black Panther was record-breaking.
Yeah.
The other thing that I love is it is now selling more tickets... than the previous 7 Marvel movies combined.
That just tells me the appetite's huge.
I mean, it's... And you look at the last 7 movies they've made.
Yeah.
Ant-Man, Captain America Civil War, sure. Doctor Strange, Guardians Volume 2, Spider-Man Homecoming, Thor Ragnarok, and Black Panther.
All of them very highly anticipated in their own ways.
Like, some of these are massive. Like,
Thor Ragnarok,
Civil War, and Guardians 2.
Yeah. Yeah.
Massive movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you think 2 weeks out, all of those combined aren't quite at Infinity
War. People are saying, I've been listening to Collider a lot, 250 million opening weekend in the States. I heard one guy say he dropped 300. He said 300.
See, I don't think it's going to match up to
Force Awakens.
A Force Awakens.
What's Force Awakens? What is Force Awakens? Is
like opening weekend.
Things like...
I'm not sure opening weekend. I'll look it up.
Because do you think it can beat that? Because that's the Avatar of opening weekends. Do you know how Avatar's the all-time box office holder? Force Awakens is the big winner in terms of opening weekends.
Yeah, in terms of opening... So, domestically opening weekend, 247.9 million.
I think it can break it.
So, 250 million.
I think you can do 250. I honestly think Infinity War can do 250. Well, I don't know, but I mean, you know.
I think this is the closest movie in terms of numbers.
Yeah, I can't think of any movie that's got more of a better chance than this movie, honestly.
And I don't know if Infinity War is going to have as big an opening weekend. Star Wars typically has bigger opening weekends than anything else.
Sure.
But I think this movie will last.
Yeah. It's got legs.
And it potentially could make the $2 billion worldwide that Force Awakens
ooh,
did.
Yeah. Wow.
I feel like everything's hot for it. Like, there's no bad thing going into it.
I'm fucking excited about this, man.
If Black Panther can pull $1.5 billion or 1.3, whatever it's at,
yeah.
You feel like this is just going to smash through records.
Yeah. Now, Stu, I've got some news here that I put into to the news items. Actually, we both put in this. Actor TJ Miller from Deadpool, what's Weasel in Deadpool, yeah?
Yeah.
Has been arrested for making false claims about a bomb on board a train in the US. In a bizarre story, the Deadpool actor has since been released on a bond of $100K, and there's been multiple calls for him to be replaced in upcoming movies such as Deadpool 2, and as Kevin Spacey was in All the Money in the World, that's not going to happen. There's absolutely no chance at all that he will be recast as Kevin Spacey was in Deadpool 2. I would put the chances of that happening at about 0.5%. He's an idiot.
I don't think
had sexual harassment allegations last year, by the way.
Yeah.
Did you know that? Yeah.
Yes.
This guy's a fuckwit, man. Like, he's a loose cannon. He's a fuckwit. There's no way they're going to recast him. That movie, All the Money in the World, was a tiny movie. A tiny Ridley Scott movie on a much smaller budget. Deadpool 2 is a major release. Everyone knows TJ Miller's a fuckwit. It's been known for years. This is another example of an actor who's had one too many drinks and possibly too much cocaine and is doing stupid shit. And if he does 5 years in prison for this, I will laugh. But he's not going to be recast for Deadpool 2. He won't be in Deadpool 3. You
know? Well, let me put it to you this way. When Kevin Spacey was recast, it was 1 month before that movie came out.
I know. And Ridley Scott got them all together. But it was a tiny movie, is what I'm saying. It was a tiny film. And Ridley Scott.
Yes, but Weasel's role in Deadpool is pretty small. He's only ever in the bar... He's really only talking to the bar rats and Deadpool.
Dude, it wouldn't worry me if he's recast. I think TJ Miller is a piece of scum, and I've always thought this. There's a lot of allegations of TJ Miller in the last few years, if you read into it. He's apparently a bit of a prick. Anyone who does this, who calls the cops on a woman on a train, saying she had a bomb in a bag, and she got, like, fucking arrested and searched and all this shit, and it turned out to be baseless. He wasn't even on the same train. I was reading about it before the show tonight.
Yeah, so...
I don't know if he's the original
person. He was on a train. Witnesses say that he'd been drinking, and he was drinking while on the train as well.
Is that legal?
I don't know whether it's legal in the States.
I don't know. Maybe it is.
I mean, drinking before on the train, yes, obviously, but...
Drinking on the train here is not allowed.
Not in Australia, but who knows? It might be different. There are reports that he had an altercation with this woman.
Really?
And he was annoyed with this woman for whatever reason. They didn't really go into it. He called the authority, called 911. He said, this lady has a bomb. But he gave the wrong train number. The police... And, there was a full-on...
Investigation.
Police squad that came in and stopped that other train to search it.
Money and time and people's days.
They realised that wasn't the right train. They then came to his train.
Mm.
They searched the train. They found no trace of any bomb.
Sure. Bullshit.
Yeah. People are saying that the problem is, not long ago in Texas, someone did the same thing. They called in a fake bomb threat.
Mm.
When they went into that location they heard the bomb threat was, someone was reaching into a backpack.
Right, got shot.
They got shot and killed by the police.
It could easily happen.
Because...
charged times.
Exactly.
Like, terrorism is a real...
And the police were saying, we thought there was a bomb, we were told it, and they were reaching into a backpack, and we said to stop,
yeah.
We had to shoot. And they were right. They had to do what they did. Unfortunately
there's a lot of
this person in Texas died because of a false claim.
Fundamentalists who are apt to destroy our society. And, yeah.
Well, there's fundamentalists. Whether they are Muslim, whether they are anything else, it doesn't really matter.
Okay. Well, regardless, they're not guilty here. TJ Miller is.
No, and there's reports that he was, blackout drunk in the last season of Silicon Valley, in between takes.
I fucking hate this prick, to be honest. If I could kick this guy to the curb myself, I would. I really think he's a piece of shit. If they recast him in Deadpool, good. I don't give a fuck. I don't think they will. But, I couldn't give a fuck if they did. You know?
There is talk that they'll recast him with Christopher Plummer. Because that's who recast Kevin Spacey. And it's a funny little nod to...
That's amusing. I mean, Christopher Plummer is,
Yeah. Ancient. That's what will make it hilarious.
I'd be down for it.
I think that works in Deadpool. That kind of joke really works in Deadpool.
And you can make a joke. And if his role's tiny...
It's Weasel. He's not got a massive role.
No, yeah.
He runs the bar and hands out a few missions every now and again. It's not a...
Weasel's fun. But, I really dislike this TJ Miller guy, man, to be honest. I actually, when I was researching some of the other articles, I got a real bit of taste in my mouth. And now that I hear more of the details that you have, I hate him even more. Are you sharing my feelings, man, or where are you?
I'm not as extreme. I actually quite liked his comedy.
Yeah.
I think he's a funny guy.
Yeah. Definitely.
I don't think that makes up for anything he's done.
Sure. Would you keep him the curb like me?
Well, honestly, I feel like he has an actual problem. I feel like he's addicted to something.
Sing me a fucking sad song. Well, I don't know, man. You hear a lot of these actors who do this kind of crazy shit.
Whether he's an actor, whether he's a politician, whether he's a guy that runs a local store, if he has an addiction...
Okay.
Then that is the problem.
Okay, but, it doesn't excuse it.
No, it doesn't, and I said that.
Well, he go to treatment then. But get recast. You know?
Yes.
I don't know. But they often sing this song now when they're convicted of crimes. They put their hands up and go, I'm a drug addict, I'm an alcoholic, I'm this, I'm that. Trying to get...
He hasn't.
...taken off. Well, let's wait and see. When he's in... Because he's been charged.
Yeah, he's released.
Yeah, on bail. So he's going to be bailed and he's going to put before a court. So he's going to be... He's charged.
Yeah.
So, well, then he sings a sad song about whether he's into drugs and all that kind of stuff.
Look, at this stage, he hasn't, which normally says that he is.
Yeah.
Because if you come out day one and say, I'm addicted to everything, you're not. You're just trying to make an excuse.
Okay. You're more, it feels like you're more forgiving on this than me. I mean, I just feel dude, what if he was just getting blazed on the train and just...
At the moment, what's wrong with the planet as a whole is people believe so strongly in what they believe in that they are willing to hurt other people if they don't.
But dude, what about this guy?
And what you just said then was...
He got blazed on a train and caused all this ruckus. What if he doesn't really have alcohol addiction? What if he's just a bit of a drunk? And he was just drinking. And there's not really this massive crippling addiction. He was just being a bit of a fuckboy. What if that's the case?
You still want to hurt this person?
Not really hurt him. I want him imprisoned. You know, I think
this world is too quick to go kill the guy, and that's what's happening worldwide.
I'm not saying kill the guy. I've never said to kill this guy. killing
you him. Said you want to kick him in the head yourself.
I kick him to the curb.
That is the most violent thing you've said this podcast.
I just think it's a bit much when these guys commit crimes. Let's not forget, a woman was accused of being a terrorist, and she was completely innocent.
Yeah.
And her whole day was disrupted, along with all the other commuters, all because of TJ Miller was doing what he felt was a hilarious prank. You know?
And well, no one at any point has said it was a prank and it was funny or it was meant to be funny.
What isn't
a You've taken that all on your own, this end.
At no point
has any news reporter said this was a prank.
This reporter is saying, I think he thinks it's a prank. I think he thinks he's the original prankster.
Do you know how many things are wrong with saying, I think he thinks?
Otherwise, dude, what description, what are you saying? What's the rationale behind it?
That we know these two had a fight. He was drunk.
Okay.
That's all the information I need.
All right. Well, okay. I mean, I don't know. You sound more forgiving on him than me. But do you want him recast? That's my question to you.
I honestly don't care. I feel like he's not going to be a big enough role in this movie to worry about.
Agree. He's going to be minor.
If they recast, I don't blame them. And I think you could make a lot of jokes. It's Deadpool. I think it works.
But the time's going to be though.
Well, like we said, Kevin Spacey was recast within a month of that film getting released. We're more than a month away from Deadpool, so it's totally plausible to recast.
Was there any indication they're actually going to do it? Like, or was it just people on the internet talking?
It's another wave. The first wave came when he was accused of all those sexual harassment issues last year. But when that came out, obviously nowhere near the level that Kevin Spacey had.
Well, he is very disputed. The allegations go back and forth. It's an ex. It's all sorts of things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So there was a wave of appeals back then saying recast him, same as Kevin Spacey.
The height of the Me Too movement.
Yeah. And it as far as we know, Fox basically went, we're just going to leave him in the movie.
Yeah.
We've already filmed everything. We're not going to spend time and effort when we can't prove anything.
Good point, though. This is actually a criminal charge. I mean, I only read it just before the show.
There is the potential for 5 years in jail.
He'll never do 5 years in jail for this. But
no, he won't. Remembering that this guy actually does have brain damage.
Does he?
Yes, we've said this on the show before.
I don't remember. What
he legitimately has a chunk of brain missing from his head. It was cut out as a kid.
Does he really?
Yeah, he had a brain tumor or something.
Okay, that's going to be brought into the defense. That'll be brought to the fence.
Look, he's been a successful comedian for years, so clearly it's not impacting him
to that extent. The chance of that being brought up by his lawyer, I'd put it about 95%.
It's not impacting his cognitive ability, but it may impact his tolerance for addiction.
That's what I'm saying, Stu. All this will get brought up by the court. I mean, he better hope he gets a judge like you, because you sound like you're going to give him a good behaviour bond or something. I'd give him 6 months, go away. Or 6 months in a treatment facility. That's what I'd do, actually.
Well, yeah, you'd put him in a treatment facility. That's what he needs.
I agree with you there, Stu. You think I'm very harsh, but I actually think a lot of times, if you want my honest opinion, I think a lot of addictions can be treated in those facilities, but they're expensive, and, you know, they don't always take.
Take because a lot of people don't always want them to take.
Sure.
And TJ Miller has enough money.
Sure.
To do this. There are free facilities. There are government-led facilities that do it.
Sure.
Like, he's obviously... No, he's going to want to go to, like, the high-end rehab facilities where you pay through the nose.
Stay off the junk and don't drink alcohol. I mean, especially...
But, I mean, look at someone like RDJ. You could have very easily said, no, prison sentence.
He did go to prison.
Yeah, but, like, a long prison sentence, as opposed to...
A couple of years.
A shorter one and then rehab.
Look, RDJ, I mean, shoot, I am so supportive of RDJ, and his trials in the 90s with drugs were a real wake-up call to a lot of people. That was a brilliant actor just burning out of a spiral for many years, like 10 years, like if not more. It was almost like watching a tragedy in action for his long-term fans that he miraculously came out of, and I can only imagine, I mean... The rehab finally worked, but it was a lot of rehab, and it was court time. And remember, I remember when he went to prison, and he said to the judge, it feels like I've got a gun in my mouth and I like the taste of the metal. He actually said that in court to the judge. And I remember, it was eye-opening for a lot of people at the time.
Yeah. Who
just really thought that there was no consequence to hardcore drug use, and they were just watching a guy just piss it all away who had millions. And his comeback is probably one of the most unlikely in Hollywood. The thing for him was...
I mean, look, that's obviously an extreme case.
It was.
And his success has been astronomical.
His saving grace was his talent, and that Hollywood was very forgiving to him and kept willing to cast him, and he got put out on a mobile. He had plenty of chances.
Yeah.
He had a lot of goodwill because he was such a brilliant actor. And I think a lot of people genuinely liked Artie J. There was a lot of goodwill sentiment on his side. T.J. Miller, on the other hand, has always been a fairly acidic presence who hasn't had the kind of mainstream appeal. But I'm interested to see what happens.
But I mean, remembering that he has only been in Hollywood for that period of time where he has been in that downward spiral.
Sure. Exactly, mate. I mean, it's a tale as old as time, if you go back to Hollywood, of people who piss away on drugs and alcohol.
Yeah.
Who get caught out. There's like... dating back to the 30s and 40s, guys caught with hookers in their room and, like, their career's ruined. They spend the next 20 years, like, you know, getting drunk in bars, trying to recapture the glory days.
Yeah.
And, like, Hollywood is not this bastion of integrity that it pretends to be. They will sell anything that sells, but they're worried about public perception. T.J. Miller, though, I mean, he's a fairly fringe presence, so I wonder if his hardcore fan base... I imagine some of his hardcore fan base are kind of laughing. Like, that's the kind of negative kind of, like...
He's more revered in like stand-up and comedy as opposed to acting.
Yeah.
He's not a massive presence in the acting scene.
What's his show that he was in, man? The one about Silicon Valley. What's it called?
Silicon Valley.
Is it Silicon Valley?
Okay. Yeah.
Because he left that show, didn't he, recently?
He was asked not to come back, yeah.
He'd get a half, you know. There's questions over the guy, man. I mean, I'm not really a big supporter. Put him in treatment, see what happens. But if they recast him as Christopher Plummer... Which is actually hilarious, considering...
See, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think that would be funny if that happened.
I think it would be funny. And even more funny...
Just because it's so out of place to have Christopher Plummer there.
Christopher Plummer's like 85 or something.
And you can imagine so many people watching the movie going, what the fuck was Plummer doing there? And then going home and Googling it.
And you could go and make a fourth wall break, do all sorts of things.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, I'd be down for it. I think it's a good one, Stu. Now, what have you got here? Some news on Joss Whedon. What's going on?
So even after the departure of Joss Whedon... Mm. Batgirl still seems like a priority at DC.
Oh, they're still moving forward.
They've put a new writer on, Christina Hodgson, confirmed to be writing the script. She has also written Gotham City Sirens.
Okay.
And she's the listed writer on the Bumblebee spin-off coming out soon.
The very interesting Bumblebee spin-off.
Who knows? But look, she is currently writing a lot of big properties.
Yeah, okay.
It's
sad that we haven't seen any of them, have we? You know, it's like...
She's had one or two smaller things that have come out already, but she's working largely at the moment on upcoming movies.
It's good to hear that Batgirl is still churning along,
Yeah, and it looks like they're trying to tie it in with Gotham City Sirens.
Oh, that makes total sense.
Same writer. Yeah. They're looking to, you know, have the actress run between two movies.
Oh, massively. Massively, dude. Like, I mean, there's even room for a Birds of Prey movie, dude, at some point.
Potentially, yeah.
Like, all those things are kind of like a quadrant where they're all going in together. Like, I mean, Batgirl becomes a member of the Birds of Prey. She's just one of the founding members with Black Canary. Is it Huntress? I think it's one of the original
Yeah, Huntress.
Yeah. We love that series, man.
That was great.
Great series.
Really cool.
Now, Stu, you have got the rare potential slip-up from Marvel. What happened?
Okay, so in the last week, Marvel have released about 15 different TV spots across the globe in different countries.
Sure.
And they're all more or less showing the same thing, which is scenes that were in the final trailer, a couple of new little bits and pieces. One of them is showing Thanos walking through that portal onto Earth.
Yep, without the helmet.
Without the helmet, wearing the gauntlet on his left hand.
Cool.
And he walks through the portal onto Earth. We've seen that before. In every view we've seen currently... The screen is showing Thanos walking from around the waist up.
Yeah.
You can see the left hand is in the gauntlet, but at about the wrist is the bottom of the frame. And he walks in, so you never actually see the fingers or the gems on the glove. Yeah. However, when they released this last trailer, if you viewed it on Twitter or if you viewed it on Instagram, the aspect ratio of the video changes. And you saw another, like, centimetre of screen at the bottom of the picture. Yeah. And for literally 1 second, so a single frame, you see the gauntlet on Thanos with four gems in it when he reaches Earth.
So he's got four by that point.
Wow, cool. In every other trailer, like, we've seen him when he's trying to crush Captain America.
Six.
Yeah, the six total. When he's trying to crush Cap in the trailer, yeah, and Cap's holding on,
yeah,
and he's got two gems sitting there.
So basically that means it's quite late in the movie when he comes to Earth.
Well, no, it means the other trailers have been changed.
Oh, okay.
We've seen this before recently in Thor Ragnarok, the final scene on the bridge.
Yes.
In all the trailers, Thor had two eyes.
Yeah. I love that kind of stuff.
Because they changed what they filmed, so they didn't give any spoilers.
But this time they sort of didn't, and it got caught out on Twitter.
Well, no, this is the first time we've caught them doing it on Twitter.
Right.
They have been changing every trailer we've seen to only put two gems in there.
Yeah.
When he actually has more.
Hmm. Okay.
So it looks like he picks up the two gems we know of, the space gem he already has,
mm-hmm,
and the power gem he already has, mm-hmm, in all the trailers.
Mm-hmm.
According to this, he also picks up the reality gem, which means he goes via the collector's place.
Mm-hmm. Which is the one that Loki had?
Space.
Okay, right. Which he got at the end of Thor Ragnarok.
That's one of the ones we've always seen him have in the gauntlet. So that's reasonably early in the film. And the other one he picks up was the Soul Gem, which we don't know where it is yet.
Okay.
So it looks like it's not on Earth, and he's coming, and he collects it on his way to Earth.
Could it be, is that the one that was locked up by the Nova Corps?
No, that's the Power Gem.
Okay. A bit of a guess by me there. It's just out of the dark from me.
Yeah. Dave clearly not listening to a word I've been saying.
No, after I
literally said the Soul Gem, which we haven't seen before in any Marvel movie, he collects on his way to Earth.
You know that I trust you with all this gem stuff. I mean, give me a break. I've got a bad back over here. And I am very, very interested in seeing this film, obviously.
So it wipes out the idea that the Soul Gem is in Wakanda.
Mm.
Can't be in Wakanda anymore. It could be on Titan.
That was my guess.
Yeah, it was my guess as well.
Ugh.
It could be on Titan, which is why they have that battle there.
Yeah. What about Titan now? Because we just, from the trade this week.
The other one I'd actually love to see is one of the other Elders of the Galaxy has it.
I'd love to see that.
Like have the Gardener or someone.
What about the Grandmaster? Does he have one?
No.
So
it's a pity. Like, I'd love to see more Jeff Goldblum, but yeah, no, he doesn't have an Infinity Stone.
Could they change shit around though so that he does?
I mean, they could, but Jeff Goldblum isn't in Infinity War.
Okay. But the Gardener, as you say, Stu.
Like, there are other Elders.
We saw the Gardener in the trade this week, and he hasn't been in the...
He has... Well, they've changed locations of all the gems, obviously. Mm. So in the comics, the Gardener had the Time Gem.
Yeah, but the Gardener hasn't been in the movies yet, has he?
No, he hasn't.
Hmm.
We've only seen the Grandmaster and the Collector.
Man.
There's the Champion. There's the Champion.
Elders.
The Elders of the Universe.
Now, man. I'm loving the Elders.
There's the Champion and the Gardener that we haven't seen or heard anything of.
Yeah.
Both of them could have it.
Man, it's fascinating. Well, we'll find out.
I mean, in the comics, Adam Warlock has it.
Yeah, but he's not going to be in it.
He's not in this one. We're suspecting he's in Avengers 4.
Okay. And there was the scene pointing to him in the end of Guardians 2, wasn't there?
Yes, that was Adam inside that cocoon in the end of Guardians 2, in the post-credit scene.
Now,
with Aisha.
Stu, turning away from Marvel and onto DC, have you seen the pictures released for Starfire, Beast Boy, and Raven for the DC Titan show?
It doesn't look good, does it?
Oh, it's awful, man. Starfire looks like an aged black prostitute in the middle of like blaxploitation era. It was one of the worst images I've ever seen. This blew my enthusiasm apart for the DC Titan show. Remember how I was quite hyped on it based on the Robin costume? And we mentioned many times how cool that Robin costume looked. Beast Boy, Raven, and Starfire look like some of the worst costumes I've ever seen in my life, Stu, for any of these shows. Like, I'm sorry, I'm not going to be watching that, let alone paying for the subscribing service, the streaming service. Are you, Stu? What's happening?
It's weird, isn't it? Like,
it's terrible.
They keep wanting us to subscribe to things, and they give us...
Does she not look like an aged black hooker? Like, you know, at the end of, like, a big drug bender. I don't know, I just don't get it, man. I'm just like, I just can't fathom what's going on with that look for Starfire. It's terrible. Also, Stu, James Cameron and Tim Miller's Soft Terminator reboot has seen its release date change, moving to November 2019. The untitled Terminator 6 script has been written by David Goyer, Justin Rose, Josh Freeman and Billy Ray. The project, according to James Cameron, is very much in operation with the production scheduled to begin in May. Just this week, Michelle and I watched Terminator 3 Rise of the Machines, just to get a taste again of that Terminator franchise. Will you be seeing it in cinema, Stu?
Probably not, to be honest.
I will be, because Michelle's such a big fan. But this is the last roll of the dice for the Terminator franchise for me.
Yeah, see, I rolled the dice with...
Genesis.
Yeah, Genesis, and didn't really pay off.
But I'm hoping with James Cameron and Tim Miller, they could come on to something. Tim Miller's coming off Deadpool, you know. And James Cameron, I mean, if he's involved, if he's actually involved, not just giving his blessing, like he gave his blessing to Terminator 3 and to Genesis.
Yeah, I feel like Arnie's only half in it, which I don't think is good. I feel like he should either not be in it. I just don't think he should be in it, to be honest with you.
Well, he's definitely in it, and Linda Hamilton's been brought back as well.
Yeah, that amazing actress that was cast in so many other movies.
Look, she's good at Judgment Day. But it's a direct sequel to Judgment Day as well, apparently.
Ugh.
So it's ignoring all the other Terminator movies other than Terminator 1 and Judgment Day.
I don't know.
We'll see.
This feels like another franchise that kind of needs either a hard reboot.
Maybe a start again.
Yeah, a start again, hard reboot, yeah. Or maybe an alternate universe, or...
Look, if I'm being honest, I would have thought if you were going to really turn this around, I would have gone... Go back to complete new start, but keep, you know, the best thing about Terminator outside of Arnie, the actual robots still look really cool. I was watching one of those machines, and they're still a badass look. Like, you could do a good Terminator.
Yeah, like, for me, I'd be pitching to get more of the Arnie type people in these movies.
Yeah.
Have lesser known, like, bodybuilders,
yeah.
Strong men kind of people come in and do these movies as Terminators. Someone like John Cena would be amazing.
Yeah, no, he
looks the part as an Arnie. But, like, go the strongman competition. Get someone like Brian Shaw. Have you seen Brian Shaw?
I haven't personally, no.
Well, four-time world's strongest man. He's about 6'8".
Yeah.
He's an absolute beast of a man. He stands up next to the mountain from Game of Thrones.
Wow.
And he's, like, an inch shorter than him.
So he's huge.
He can lift, like, 200 kilos over his head. Like, the dude's an absolute beast.
Yeah, rather than a very aged Arnie.
Exactly. Have a few of those guys that don't need to do massive acting. Like, they're acting as a robot.
Yeah.
Which means their acting can be terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
Give them a break. Like, let them do something.
Well, we'll see what happens. Now, Stu, the Russo brothers were interested in Secret Wars once the Disney-Fox deal goes through. They were talking to a Swedish reporter and said, if that Fox deal goes through with Disney, there's a lot more characters to work with all of a sudden. It would be interesting to do something like Secret Wars, Joe Russo told a French publication. So they're open to it, which is good.
Yeah. I mean, we're kind of hitting a problem in that it feels like Phase 4 has been largely planned out.
Mm-hmm.
Their big arc over Phase 4, we think it's going to be Invasion, Secret Invasion. It may not be, but that feels like the likely candidate.
Some people were saying Annihilation.
Could be, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, you'd be behind that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, yeah. Like, there's a bunch of stories that you could run over an arc.
Does
like
Annihilation
that.
Annihilation have anything to do with Annihilus? The Fantastic Four villain? From the Negative Zone?
No.
Okay, I'm just wondering with the name.
Yeah, no.
Okay, cool.
So, look, the problem is they have already planned out their Phase 4 main arc.
Yeah.
That's 5 years at least.
Do you think Fantastic Four's involved in it? Though I do. I think Fantastic Four will be sprinkled all through that.
No, I think they've kind of left space.
Yeah.
If we get Fantastic Four, we could sprinkle them in here and here.
Yeah.
If we don't get them, don't worry about it.
Yeah, exactly.
But if they're looking at something like a Secret Wars... Exactly right. Something like Secret Wars would be at least, like, 10 years away.
I've got a theory for you, Stu. I heard John Snap say this. He reckons the end of Avengers 3, Infinity War,
yep.
That Spidey will have the symbiote suit.
It makes sense. Oh, well, I mean, look, the Venom movie is coming up.
Yeah.
That is going to be... They've already decided where the Venom symbiote is.
Yeah, but maybe the symbiote's on Spidey and he takes it back to Earth. Who knows?
It could be. It could be on Titan or something like that.
Yeah,
we know Spidey's on Titan.
In the lab and it comes onto him, you know?
Could be. I feel like just because they've already filmed the Venom movie, they've already got their own...
sort of log line of what's going on.
Yeah, and Marvel would not have given them the script to Infinity War.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't even give Tom Holland the script to Infinity War, so I doubt...
I actually think it's nothing more than fanciful imagination.
Yeah, I don't think these two studios are working that closely together.
I think potentially in Avengers 4, which is leading to Spider-Man Homecoming 2, that could happen. But I
feel like the studios are basically saying to each other, Tom Holland will survive at the end of this movie, he'll be a little beaten up, he'll have a brand new suit, this is what the suit can do.
Yeah.
They are not going to give away plot points like, he has the black suit and he gets a symbiote.
Unless contractually they have to. They may contractually have to, you know?
I mean, they're barely giving out scripts to the actors on the movie. Like, I doubt they'd be giving them to their competition in Fox.
It wouldn't surprise me if they have to give a detailed synopsis of what Spidey's doing in this movie.
I don't think they'd have... I think they'd have to give them an end point.
Yeah.
And they'd have to line up a start point. So Homecoming ends with Tom Holland in this state.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we pick up the next movie. We run him in two. He has a new suit in this and this.
Yep.
A little bit older. Maybe he gets a scar somewhere. Like, details like that, which we need continuity.
Yeah.
I doubt they're going to be giving him, you know, anything like Aunt May dies or... any of those major things that Fox is going to have to change. And largely it's because this deal doesn't have to go through.
No, it doesn't.
You don't want to be giving your plot for Infinity War to a rival studio when this deal may not go through.
Yeah, no, true.
Because that studio could very easily spoil the shit out of your movie.
And that's even taken into aside this Sony Marvel Disney relationship. It's almost a relationship on very thin ice, isn't it? It exists purely... to monetize
Spider-Man. I mean, I feel like everyone's shaking hands, but then they go back into their own
quarters
and they're like, can you believe those fucking idiots are falling for it?
It's a very political Middle East...
It's very tense. It's very much like a Cold War kind of...
Yeah. Now, Stu, we have some news here on the Lord of the Rings TV show. Amazon's Lord of the Rings TV series will reportedly have 5 seasons and will cost $1 billion, Stu, which makes it one of the most expensive TV shows of all time. Part of the deal is that Amazon is guaranteed they'll begin production on the series within 2 years to keep the deal alive. They're already looking at the potential of a spin-off already. Filmmaker Peter Jackson isn't involved at this point, but there's nothing stopping him from either being in it either, and his lawyer has indicated he has already had a dialogue with Amazon. I mean, it's fascinating, Stu, because it does mean that within 2 years they're going to have a product. So it's been...
The other really good news is they've already said it will have 5 seasons.
Yeah, cool.
Normally, if the show is going to be one of these limps on to infinity like a Supernatural's been doing,
mm-hmm.
they'll say it's signed up for... 2-3 seasons.
Sure.
When it says they're going to have 5 seasons, it means they're plotting for an end.
Definitely.
Which makes such a big difference because they can end it well.
Yeah.
All of the best TV shows that have come and gone
mm-hmm.
have had strong endings.
Cheers,
Breaking Bad, MASH.
Yeah.
Like
MASH
some of the...
MASH has got a great final episode.
Yeah, like some of the biggest shows of all time.
Goodbye, Farewell and Amen.
Had an amazing farewell season.
Yeah.
They would wrap up stories properly. And then, like, they're talking about spin-offs, which is the best way to limp on.
Yeah, definitely.
That is how you limp on. Breaking Bad ended beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
Better Call Saul can limp on.
Love it.
And it will run for a few seasons, and then maybe they'll have another spin-off in a different direction somewhere.
No, definitely.
That's the way to do it.
No, this I'm excited about this, and it's also...
Great news.
It's not the main log line of Lord of the Rings books. This is all... It's all associated sort of stuff around it, in the world, basically.
Yeah, beautiful.
And, you know, I'm very interested to see what happens. Now, Stu, Jake Gyllenhaal addressed rumours, and he said he won't be the next Batman. Did you actually watch the footage? Did he come out and say he's not going to be Batman? Is that what he said?
When they asked him about it... He basically gave them this sarcastic comment that ended in, the answer is until solid no, I'm not doing it.
Right.
So, the role of Batman is still up for grabs.
Okay,
still available. Dave's still available if you want that kind of Batman.
I'm terrible back at the moment. I can barely walk or sit down, so I don't know how much leaping I can do around the rooftops.
Yeah.
I could play Batman Beyond, the aged version of Bruce Wayne.
Nice.
Yeah, I could do that.
Yeah.
I could do that fine. He's grumpy.
Yeah.
I could easily play that role.
Yeah, sure. Maybe a grumpy Commissioner Gordon. You know?
Hell yeah. Now it's starting.
You can do that, yeah.
Definitely.
Put you in a trench coat.
I'd have to get out the actor now, whatever his name is.
Yeah, J.K. Simmons.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Yeah, good luck.
He's awesome.
He's amazing.
Now, Stu, Nicolas Cage thinks he'd make a great Joker. He admits his superhero hope days are behind him, and if he was to move back into that format, it would probably be as the villain. He mentioned Dr. Doom as a role he would like. In particular, lead up to putting on the mask, because he didn't like earlier the Doctor Doom always had to have a mask on. I think it's a great what if. And there's nothing to say that I mean, forget about Joker. I don't think he's much of a chance there. But there's nothing to say that Nicolas Cage couldn't play a Marvel role at some point at all, like a villain role.
I honestly feel like the Joker's the most likely villain for him.
He'd be awesome.
Because he's... I feel like you've got to play into the unhinged side of Nick Cage.
Yeah, yeah.
Nick Cage doesn't do... like he could never do like a Two-Face. A suited up, lawyer trained, calculating villain, I don't think he could pull off.
Not at this point in his career, where he's gone so cartoony, you know, which is what Nick Cage has done. Like, he occasionally buttons his roles down, but if you're paying for Nick Cage as a villain...
But want if you want Nick Cage, yeah, you want full-on Nick Cage. It's same as getting Jeff Goldblum.
Oh, yeah.
You don't put Jeff Goldblum in the tiny role and playing an assistant to someone.
No.
You let him do him.
It wouldn't surprise me if Nick Cage, being a comic fan that he is, and he's still a name in the industry, it wouldn't surprise me if he winds up in a Marvel movie at some point, playing an elder or something. It really wouldn't.
See, you could throw him in as a gardener so quickly and have him play an elder of the universe.
I heard someone say Bill Murray as well for the gardener.
Oh, that'd be great.
Great move.
Yes.
Bill Murray's
because you can just imagine all of the collectors coming together. It's all of like collector, gardener, grandma, all coming together at some point, and that'd be an amazing scene, wouldn't it?
Can you just imagine them in a room together?
Benicio del Toro, Jeff Goldblum.
Benicio del Toro and Jeff Goldblum playing off each other in a movie. I know they've done it very briefly in like a little side trailer, haven't they? I think there's a little thing out there.
What, in Marvel?
Yeah, I think.
No.
Didn't they do some sort of like, I thought the two of them did some sort of...
Nope.
Spin-off. Okay, well, I think that would be a fantastic idea for a scene. Like, and in all these Infinity Wars and stuff, I mean, as elders, they're survivors. You know?
It'd be cool to see them post-Infinity War, talking about how they should be the Guardians of the Stones or something.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, have them come together. That'd be awesome. And you could see all of them.
Definitely. That'd be great, man. Now, Kurt Busiek's job, it was interesting to hear what your thoughts were here. Now, Kurt Busiek with George Perez did quite a long and very well-respected run on Avengers. Now, it kind of tallied up to the time where Mark Miller was about to come on and do the Ultimates at Marvel. And Mark Miller put out a series of tweets recently where he said Avengers was a dead franchise before the Ultimates came along. Now, I'm guilty of thinking the same kind of stuff, but Kurt Busiek, who's got a long history in the industry, Stu, and has done stuff like Astro City, all sorts of things... he actually pointed to the fact that his Avengers was actually very high selling and the hardcovers continue to sell well and have sold a great number, and he sort of made the point that you don't have to savage one to like the other, and he was sort of just giving the counter argument. He's going, we're actually outselling nearly every single Marvel title during my run, and he left of his own accord when Ultimates was going to happen because he didn't want to be seen as the older guy on the block when Ultimates was coming. I just thought it was interesting to get the other perspective of the guy who turned around and said, actually, my hardcovers of Avengers sold really well.
Yeah.
You know, so, and Mark Miller was kind of trash talking and kind of putting his place a little bit. It sounds like to me.
Yeah.
Any comments, Jim? Have you read any of it? Like, because I thought you being the Avengers guy might have actually read it. Like, I've actually got them online, like digitally. But I haven't read them, but I thought for an idea for a show at one point, we might do Kurt Busiek, George Perez Avengers. It's kind of, I believe it's like early 2000s, and apparently it's very good.
Yeah, look, the idea of saying that something's a dead franchise, it's not. Look, every single long-running franchise has ups and downs.
Sure.
You could say the same thing about Spider-Man at certain times and Batman at certain times. And
yeah, Batman in about 1980... there was talk of actually cancelling the title along.
Exactly.
You know? Seems absurd now.
Yeah.
So,
look, every run has downs and ups. I feel like this guy's just talking trash.
Mark Miller loves to talk a bit of trash. He likes to throw a lot of shade at Marvel and DC because he's gone on to have so many hits of his own. And it was funny, in this case, Kurt Busiek very kind of politely put him in his place.
Yeah.
Which I liked. Now, Stu, the Red Sonja movie gets a writer. A remake of Red Sonja is yet to happen. Fans of the character are in luck. The screenwriter is reportedly signed on to create a new draft of the comic book character, with Ashley Edward Miller being tapped by Millennium Films in hopes to bring the project to life. I think Red Sonja is a long way away. I think it's as far away as Conan the Kings, you know? Which is the movie that Arnie was talking about for literally 25 years. Red Sonja is a really cool character and an offshoot of the Conan franchise, Stu. But, I mean, I'd go and see it, but I would honestly think it would even be better as a Netflix series, you know? I think that something like Red Sonja as a Sword and Sorcery tale would be fantastic at Netflix. As opposed
to Red Sonja was a spin-off from Conan.
Yes.
Like, it's...
Yeah.
And I think there was a movie. There was a Red Sonja movie. A
terrible Red Sonja movie in the mid-80s.
Yeah.
With Brigitte Nielsen, I believe.
Was it Brigitte Nielsen? Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Regardless, it was terrible, Stu. But I mean, Red Sonja, the comics, there's actually some really cool Red Sonja comics. Gal Simone's done a lot of them. and plenty of people, Roy Thomas, there's like a lot of Red Sonja comics. I actually read quite a lot of Red Sonja. She's pretty cool. She's pretty much a female Conan in a lot of ways. Like, she has a lot of similarities to Conan.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at the success of the TV show Vikings, which is on Netflix, very similar kind of world building.
Yeah.
Like, clearly it has an audience on Netflix.
Oh, for sure. And that's
or some similar streaming service.
That's where I think would be fantastic. And you know how excited I am for the Conan TV series as well. I've always said Conan would be very well suited to an episodic TV series.
Yeah.
Much more than...
it gives you more space to build a world with.
Yeah, definitely. We've already covered the thing about the Rogue One guy. This was funny, man. Just to get towards the end of the news, Zack Snyder has again been on his it's Vimeo or something. He's on some sort of weird sort of streaming service or social media platform, and he said he was saying that it wasn't Jason Todd in Batman vs Superman. What made you think it was Jason Todd? And he was pointing the fact that it was Dick Grayson, not Jason Todd, in his version of Justice League and Batman vs Superman.
Sorry, you start again? You skipped an idea there.
Basically, Zack Snyder was saying that he was saying to people on this social media service that it wasn't...
That what wasn't?
You remember in Batman vs Superman, there's the Robin?
The suit.
Yeah, the suit with the like Joker's written on it, spray painted. He's saying you all thought it was Jason Todd. What made you think that? And he was pointing to it being Dick Grayson as the Robin, like the original Robin. As the dead one, not Jason Todd, which is what everyone thought it was and was kind of reported on. People who were touring, actually people you know, doing the tours at Warner's, actually were giving the tour and saying this is Jason Todd, Robin's suit. And Zack Snyder has been casting a lot of shade recently, doing a lot of reveals of stuff that he had planned for Justice League 2. He's kind of been doing a bit of trolling of his own.
This seems like a weird comment to make. Yeah. Like,
well,
Zack Snyder, you need to kind of shut up now and move on.
Yeah, kind of move on. And also, as well, Matt Reeves said that his Batman movie won't deal with the death of Jason Todd, aka Robin, so he won't be handling that at all. That's what Matt Reeves, a source on the Matt Reeves production said, won't be handling that.
Have we ever seen any kind of Jason Todd appear in any cinematic version? We've seen him in animated runs, but...
Like in Red Hood and stuff. No.
But we've only ever seen a Dick Grayson in...
Like
the movies,
Batman Robin and Batman Forever, and obviously the Batman TV.
And then Dark Knight Rises had a Robin.
Robin, yeah. terrible part of the plot.
Not even Dick Grayson, just
awful.
Robin.
It was awful.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
No, Jason Todd has only ever appeared in animated. He was in Batman animated TV series. He's in the Under the Hood.
I mean, I feel like if you were a filmmaker, I wouldn't want to go near Jason Todd either. You could do an aftermath.
Yeah.
But as soon as you introduce a Robin called Jason, every comic book fan is going
to
know
he's been the death of the crime.
That guy's going to die. And he's going to die in a bloody way.
Yeah. Unless that's used in the story. I'm not crying out.
See, for me, run the same story, but run it with someone like a Dick Grayson. If you swap the roles, if you swap the names of Dick Grayson and Jason Todd, and had Dick Grayson be the one that was beaten, and then Jason becomes Nightwing.
Well, it sounds like that was the very inventive idea that Zack Snyder may have had, he claims, you know?
Like, that's the only way you can do it, because...
Yeah. So you surprise the audience.
Yeah.
And frankly, the audience has always had much more of a connection to Dick Grayson Robin. Jason Todd was famously not popular. He was literally voted to death by the audience.
Well, yeah, it was like a call-in vote.
I didn't call in because I was in Australia, but I remember the incident. And... They've gone on record. Denny O'Neill has gone on record. He was the editor of the books at the time, from the late 80s through the late 90s. And he said, when they first brought Jason Todd in, which was just prior to Crisis, he was pretty much Dick Grayson version 2, very similar. And then when they did post-Crisis, they thought, we're going to make him more edgy. And they made him a bit more of a troublemaker. And when the audience started responding, they played into it heavily.
Yeah.
So like they start. Oh, the audience who doesn't like this bratty Robin who doesn't obey orders and do shit like the normal Robin, and they started playing into it. So he was a little bit of a prick.
Yeah,
it's quite interesting actually. Now, Stu, we finally hit Weekly Comics.
Hooray!
Now, the first one up, Stu, is Captain America 700, which was Mark Waid and Chris Sumney on here. Pretty much, I thought it was a good, solid Captain America fun. I gave it 8 out of 10. It wasn't the most ambitious or densely plotted tale, but it was good patriotic fun. I mean, spectacular art as well. Right, can I just say that?
Yeah, I really enjoyed the artwork. Story-wise, I didn't love it.
No. It was predictable.
frankly.
A bold move to kill Captain America.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I mean, that's a bit bold move.
And then they had the other Captain America.
Yeah. Have some alternate timeline.
I thought that was the smartest part about this.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I didn't get any closure at the end of that.
What do you think?
Like, did it work? We don't know if it ever worked.
Well, what do you think about Mark Waid's modern Captain A? I found it's patriotic. It makes me think I'm loyal to nothing, General, except a dream. That's something that Captain America says in Born Again, when he's holding the flag. Because Captain America isn't just loyal to the government of the day. He's loyal to the American dream. He's loyal to what the Founding Fathers had in mind. Like, he's loyal to the image of America, what it can aspire to be, rather than, say, Donald Trump's policies in Syria. You know what I mean?
Yes and no. Like, in this issue...
That's what he says.
Well, yeah, but in this issue, he says that, can the Founding Fathers really have understood what America is going to be today? Like,
yeah,
he kind of had that crisis of faith where he went, I so believe in America, but America is changing.
Hmm.
And I can't just go by one document anymore. Mm. Like, the world doesn't work that way. So believing what the Founding Fathers said is no longer an option for him.
Well, what does he do then? Because, like, there are two classic Captain America stories. One is fighting Nazis in World War II.
Yeah.
And versions of the Nazis. The other one is Captain America realizes the government is inherently corrupt and, you know, governed by self-interest. He has a crisis of faith. And he turns away from that. That's the other Captain America story. There's basically two, and it tends to reverberate between the two.
And 700 was a combination of the two.
Yeah. I've just found, if I can be honest, Chris Sumney incredibilized. Like, it's beautiful. But I found Mark Waid, although it's good, it feels like he's kind of just hitting basic points and telling. It just feels very unambitious to me.
Well, this felt like a lot of fan service.
Yeah, maybe that's
like the word. Cap's a fish out of water because of the time thing. Let's send him back to his heyday.
Yeah.
Where
do you stand?
And then it was hit every major point that you said about Cap's run. It's either I'm 100% against Nazis and I'm 100% for America, or I'm 100% for America, but I don't understand what that means anymore.
Yeah.
What is my life for?
And to be fair,
and in this comic, he literally does both. He goes, "I'm in love with America, but what does that mean?"
Hmm.
And they go, "Well, we can send you back to fight Nazis." And he goes, "Oh, fantastic! Let's go back and fight Nazis."
Well, in a way, though, isn't it true of many a patriot? They must, at a certain point, there's this point where you look at what the government's doing, and like, not necessarily would everyone support it in every single instance. Like, it's rare, so they must have this.
Generally speaking.
Hmm.
In a person's lifetime, a country's going to change direction. Yeah. Politically, socioeconomically, like, everything's going to change over the lifetime of a single person.
Hmm.
You can be patriotic at stages in your life, but it's rare for somebody to be patriotic for their life.
And he certainly is the very element
of... Not 100%. Like, you know, you got a lot of people that believe truly in their country, but don't agree with their prime minister or their president.
That's what I'm saying. It's quite common,
And, like, that's what's going to happen.
We support Australia, but there are times where you go, I really don't agree with what whoever's in power at the moment is doing. It happens quite common.
Exactly.
You know, I just find it interesting, and let it be said that many of the best Captain America stories are playing on these very themes, like Steve Englehart's classic Secret Empire storyline in the 70s was all about the disillusionment of Watergate. And literally Nixon was the head of the Secret Empire, and it was a great story. So, I mean, a lot of these key themes, they reverberate through Captain America's history. I just don't think Waid did anything more than just sort of tick boxes, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it wasn't an ambitious issue.
I gave it 7 out of 10 to you. What do you
give
it?
6.
Now, wow. We want to talk about Forgettable. The Immortal Men, issue 1 from DC. I gave this a 4 out of 10 to you. I found this close to unreadable.
There were literally a couple of pages that I enjoyed and I understood.
Yeah.
The rest of the time I was like, they lost me so early on, running from dream to reality and then wishing it was a dream and then wishing he wasn't in a dream and then waking up.
I mean, it was hard to follow.
But then it turns out he was in a real place and he woke up anyway. Confusing as hell. The artwork was good, but not great. It was messy at times.
It was Jim Lee, but I mean, yeah, it wasn't great Jim Lee.
It wasn't great Jim Lee.
To be honest with you, I really thought this was... You know how we generally seen to pick comics that do well? This is one where I was embarrassed that we picked it. You know what I mean?
I was like, Dave, you picked a poor comic here. But it's going to happen.
Yeah, see, this is one of the stories that I like the idea behind it.
Yeah, that's what
I think. If you pitch the story of like a group of immortal people that are controlling the world, and all of a sudden the Joker Batman from the recent DC series...
He came back again, didn't he?
...comes in and goes, it took me a long time to figure out that you're controlling everyone, but now that I know, I'm going to deal with you.
Mm.
Like, I'm thinking, that's a really cool twist.
Yeah.
This is going into the whole Illuminati thing that feeds off the conspiracy theorists out there.
But I've read so many stories that have done the Illuminati so much better, like Edward Baker and Sleeper does.
Absolutely. And then they take that amazing idea and they muddy it up so much.
Yeah.
With this school kid and...
I don't think we'll see 10 issues of Immortal Men. Do you? Stu? I think this is destined to have a very short life.
Oh, I have no idea.
I don't think this will be an Immortal Comics, Stu.
It's not going to be an Immortal Comic, no.
Then finally we had, in Weekly Comics, one that I've really been looking forward to, Domino, issue one.
Domino, issue one.
With Gal Simone on art. Man, Gal Simone writing duties. For me, Stu, I've been looking so forward to Domino, and I really, really enjoyed this comic. It was kind of a snapshot into Domino, who we know from a lot of X-Force, and in terms of in Deadpool, and Cable versus Deadpool as well, Stu. Did you enjoy it, Matt? Where were you?
Yeah, it was a fun little trip through Domino's kind of friends and rogues gallery. They're all gathered for a birthday party.
Did you like the ex-boyfriend club with Cable and all the other guys that were all massive?
Yeah, and Colossus was there. That little line at Colossus as well, that he's getting married to Kitty. That was great. Deadpool made a brief appearance, which I liked.
Deadpool was funny in it. Like, I mean, they have a connection.
Yeah.
Was Wolverine there? I guess he wasn't there, because he's not... I thought for a second Wolverine was there, but he's probably not there, because he's not known to the Marvel Universe yet.
I think he might have been there as a flashback, though.
Yes, he was.
He was there in one of the Domino flashbacks.
Yeah, in one of the scenes where she's getting her powers or something like that, and she's doing the experiment. I'm going to keep reading this one, Stu. I'm going to keep reading. I actually tweeted Gal Simone. She said the other day, "Is anyone got any podcasts to recommend for my flight?" And I typed in "Single at Doom." And I often tweet her occasionally and stuff as well. She's very nice, very, very, very funny lady, actually. I really enjoyed this one. I gave it 7.5. I mean, and my gal Diamondback turned up as well. I love Diamondback's show. I don't know if you've ever heard me going about Diamondback before. She's a Captain America villain. She was a Chicken Purple.
Yeah.
Have you heard me going about it before?
Yeah, several times. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought so. I'd be surprised if you haven't heard Stu. And so I was
punish who? Who?
7.5 from SG. Where were you?
I gave it an 8. I really enjoyed it.
Enjoyed it. Yeah.
Fun little.
We should try to keep up with Domino. Let's make it one of our weekly reads when it comes out.
When it comes out, we'll do the first few issues and see how it goes.
There it goes. Also, Stu, I did forget, and you are right, you pulled me up on it, we're doing the Avengers, and considering we've done every single episode so far, we shouldn't just skip it because I forgot.
Yeah.
You
actually had it in the show, you just didn't read it.
No, I did read it. I didn't read it out when we're doing it, but I have read the comic.
No, like, I had to move it in the show notes to a place where you would read it again.
Well, Stu, I did have a big lunch today with quite a lot to drink, so, if I'm not on top of my complete A-game, we can blame some of it on the alcohol.
Yeah, 9 hours ago, though, really? That's a bit of a stretch, Dave. Bit of a stretch.
What's true? I'm struggling from what happened here, other than there was a lot of Quicksilver.
Quicksilver figures out that what's holding everyone in stasis.
Mm-hmm.
He goes to his sister and basically says, "I need more speed. If I can catch up to it, maybe I can stop it."
How much?
And she's like, "Oh." So he gets his speed boost.
Mm.
He managed to grab onto whatever it is in the last second, and then he disappears, and everyone gets released.
And how many times Quicksilver feels like that's happened to him?
Sacrifice himself. Yeah,
he's like sacrifice.
So we don't know what's happened to him, but everyone's now out of stasis.
Yep. Miles Morales.
Yeah, we saw a large contingent of Avengers all come out of stasis.
Because the point was the world machine was breaking down and all this other stuff.
Yeah, when if you remember from the first or second issue of this run, they transported the Earth to this pocket dimension.
Yep.
Away from your Captain Marvels and those sort of people who were kind of panicking. And the way they did that was using a machine called the World Engine, which was now kind of out of control. And if it breaks, then the world would explode.
It was just going crazy, wasn't it?
Yeah, the Champions on Earth attacking, they thought he was responsible for the Earth breaking up.
Mm.
So did we. But it wasn't. It was this machine's dying. Yeah, Grandmaster's
the
machine.
And stuff were all smashed. Was that by the Champion?
I don't think he's intentionally destroyed it.
Do you think the Grandmaster...
Like, he's just rampaging on
it.
Do
you think the Grandmaster's gone for good, or will he come back?
Well, he's on the cover of next issue, so I'm pretty sure he's coming back.
Good. I like the Grandmaster. I want him back.
Spoilers, but he is on the cover of next issue.
Good.
so that's there.
Well, I'm glad.
Yep. So we saw the Avengers that could go and fight the Challenger, who is now calling himself Grandmaster Prime.
That's not
going to
last long.
It's not
going
to last long.
That's because of the new Grandmaster.
Yeah.
You know,
the Grand Grandmaster? Yeah, you're going to die.
It's not even a good title.
While the strong guys all went after trying to hold this world order, world machine in place.
Hercules was putting his hand up.
Hercules and Thor and Lightning were there trying to charge it.
I don't know who he was, but like he took off his something and said his powers expanded.
Yeah, he took off, yeah.
Who was that, Shu, you know?
I don't know. Off the top of my head, I can't remember.
He was obviously a D-lister, but who's getting his day in the sun, you know?
Yeah, he's, I'll find it. I'll find it, and I'll let you know.
Man. I'm still giving this, like...
He was kind of like the unstable mutant.
Yeah.
Who was... He took off the limiters for his powers.
Now, what would you give this, Shu, out of 10? I'm giving it a 7.5. I think it's a very consistent series.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it. I'm giving it another 8. Like, it's a another solid read. I liked the idea that...
School teacher's giving out good marks today. Must be in a good mood, mate. Like, you know, it must be my company. I mean, because you normally with your red pen, you're giving out 4s, 5s, you know, suddenly you're giving out 8s.
See? Well, yeah, except for The Immortal Man. That
was terrible.
Yeah, it was great, but...
Wasn't my point.
Avengers, great, yeah. So, yeah, and then at the very end, we had that little twist where after all the Avengers came out of stasis, Voyager transported all of them into battle at the very end. Yeah. We had the Avengers assemble moment, which we've all been waiting for.
I don't want Voyager to become a permanent member of the Avengers, do you? I hope she goes away with her father.
I doubt she will. I think she's going to leave out of shame and everything.
Shame, and maybe her and her father will sort of patch things up, and he's like, come on, there'll always be another game. I promise not to do it again until he does it again. Because he's her chess piece.
At the moment he's dead, according to the
he's got
continuity.
The way I see it, though, he's kind of like almost in a black hole. He needs to kind of gamble his way back in to the game. We don't know exactly what happened to him. It wasn't actually shown what happened to him.
Well, no, the Challenger kind of obliterated him.
But, I mean, can you obliterate an Elder?
We know that the Challenger got pushed into an alternate dimension,
but
that's likely what's happened.
Yeah, but he fought his way back. But I think the Grandmaster may have another trick up his sleeve. That's what I'm saying.
Normally does, yeah.
I hope so. I like the Grandmaster. And not just because he's played by Jeff Goldblum. I like him in The Collector. I've always liked those two. I always liked those two characters. I actually think, Stu, and this is going to tie into... I'm going to make a controversial comment. I think...
What?
Yeah.
Dave, making controversial comment.
I've been very good this show, and have made many comments, some of which I'm going to, by the way, edit out of this show. But I feel that the Grandmaster and the Collector have been underserviced in power by the movies. I don't think
that's not controversial. They've literally said that.
Okay. Well, maybe it's not controversial.
Marvel have said they have underpowered everyone in the movies.
But I want to have a moment at least where we get to get a glimpse of how powerful the Collector and or the Grandmaster
are. There's two reasons why they're not going to do that. The first is that they've depowered literally everyone.
Yeah.
It brings the initial A-list Avengers down to a street level so we can have a meaningful first movie.
Yeah.
Like Thor fighting against a robot in a small town.
Yeah.
As opposed to God level Thor fighting off an army of people on his own.
Sure. Just we swing his hammer around.
The second thing is, if you get villains that are that powerful, you fall down the same route that DC does, which is everything goes too big, too quick.
Yeah.
You don't feel anything for the villains or the heroes.
Sure.
You don't relate to anything.
But, Stu, as a guy who loves cosmic, aren't you feeling like you want a bit more juice from your cosmic characters?
No, I feel like as long as they're in proportion.
Mm.
Like, and the Hulk is the strongest kind of thing, and like Captain Marvel should be up there.
You should be happy that I'm feeling the cosmic vibe, man. Because I was just, when I was reading the Rebirth of Thanos, I was like, man, I like these elders, dude. I could watch a movie of this kind of shit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, maybe. But anyways, it's a thought for down the road.
I feel like as long as everything's still balanced, it's okay. Yeah. As soon as you bring in one character that's at their normal power level in the comics,
sure.
And it goes too far, you don't connect. That's when it starts failing.
Yeah.
You go down that DC road where you end up fighting a dark side where...
the sky kind of thing.
Yeah, the sky beams,
yeah. Yeah, that kind of shit. And that does get dull fast. But then again, when I think about it, Grandmaster in Thor Ragnarok was classic, wasn't he?
Amazing. You don't... see, I don't want to see him fighting a battle somewhere.
Yeah.
I like the fact that he's immortal and that he's millions of years old.
And he's just kind of a scumbag as well.
Yeah, and the Collector's the same way. Like, can survive a blast from an Infinity Gem.
Yeah.
And just kind of gets up and goes, well, that was pretty shit. I'm going to keep collecting now.
Yeah. Exactly.
Please leave me to my collection.
Well, so what did you give this one, Stu?
8 out of 10 again.
Yeah. I'm giving a 7.5. And that wraps up with the comics for this week, Stu. Okay, Stu, so turning to trade of the week, Silver Surfer, Rebirth of Thanos. Now, I want to kick things off by saying I got a great email from Michael Kellershim, who said he's giving this one, Stu, a 10 out of 10, as he just flipped the issues on eBay for $110 US. So, Michael's very happy. And I say, nice work on the front lines for Michael. Thank you, Stu.
Yeah, good on him.
You know, making a profit. You know, because nothing means more than money at the end of the day. It all comes down to cash. And reminder as well to the kids out there that I'm going to be at the Hornsby Odeon at the Comic Swap Meet selling Wolverine Adamantium.
Shameless plug from Dave. And Wolverine
Soul Taker by C.B. Sabowski writing as Akira Yoshida. That said, we turn to Silver Surfer, Rebirth of Thanos. Now, man, I've got to say, I actually had high expectations for this book because I kind of dug what you were... you know, sort of saying. And I also like the cover. It opens up. I've always liked Silver Surfer without knowing a lot of him, actually.
Yeah, and he's always been Stan Lee's favourite character.
Yeah, he's a cool
So, you know, I think there's a lot of hate on Silver Surfer because of what's happened in the Fantastic Four movies, where he's been poorly portrayed.
Yeah, come on.
Blame Silver Surfer. And because we haven't really seen him in a movie, everyone's like, who cares?
He'd be great in a Marvel movie.
He's an amazing character. Yeah. Such a cool character.
And the way this one started, I just want to set the scene. I'll let you take over, Stu, but the scene where Silver Surfer basically lands on this planet, he's exhausted, and I was reading it, I was really tired, I was reading it, and he goes, Silver Surfer's exhausted, he can't even remember the time he last slept.
Yeah.
And it's been years, and he falls asleep on the basically sand dunes with his board just propped up. And then he wakes up, looks up, and there's this skull image of this basically skull cave thing.
Yeah, it feels very much like the Cave of Wonders from Aladdin.
Yeah, and I... dude, that's where this comic got me. I went, wow. That the art by Ron Lim, which you say Jim Starlin on writing duties, and I've always liked Jim Starlin, which is why I had high expectations.
Yeah, look, Jim Starlin doing anything cosmic is a great fit. Yeah. Like, he is the king of cosmic.
And I know him from Batman the Cult, a really fantastic Batman story he did in the late 80s.
Yeah.
Beautiful story. Always had a high regard for Jim Starlin. Ron Lim on art, though, can't be underestimated. The art in this book is fantastic.
It's brilliant, isn't it?
Now, Stu, what I found so fascinating, and the first thing I want to put to you was, he wakes up, and straight away, he walks into the place, and basically Death's sitting on her throne and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And her helpers are there doing all that kind of stuff. And he realised he was in a dream, his own dream. I thought that was just... and then later on it seemed like he wasn't in a dream. But I actually... When they said Silver Surfer was in his own dream and he hadn't dreamt in so long because he hadn't slept, I was like, man, this is some really cool ideas being thrown on the comic book page and told in a really intelligent way. It was cosmic without losing its through line. It had a down-to-earthness despite the fact it was so cosmic. It was... I found this was a... like, Silver Surfer, through his eyes, you saw the happenings. Basically, Thanos comes back to life.
Yeah, so we see Death sitting on her throne, ordering her minions around.
Mm-hmm.
She resurrects Thanos.
Yes.
And in doing so, ups his power level.
Yes.
Which is made a big deal of in this. Like,
I didn't know that.
She significantly ups his power level, yeah, even after he almost single-handedly defeated the Avengers previously.
Yes.
So he was powerful before.
But she's given him more.
She gave him more power. So
I
he is...
like this where he's really powerful.
And he took a full blast from Silver Surfer with the power cosmic.
Yeah.
Hit him with everything he had, and Thanos kind of was a bit singed around the edges, but he brushed it off.
Yeah.
So he has some serious power.
And he's got a teleporting chair.
Yeah, so his in this, the throne has a bunch of tech built in.
Mm.
It can kind of fly and transport him. It can teleport. He can also do some basic time jumping.
Yeah. Now, Stu, I want to answer my question, though. So, in your opinion, was Silver Surfer ever in the dream?
So it was kind of like an astral plane type of thing, where he fell asleep. He was asleep, but then he kind of had this out of body experience,
sure,
where he went into Death's Temple, which isn't a physical location.
No.
So it was happening, but his body was asleep, kind of thing.
Got it. Okay, that makes sense. Considering his power as well.
Yeah,
he's a fascinating character, Silver Surfer.
I know, I love it. Okay. Like, and this is just after the period of time where he was trapped on Earth.
Right, okay.
So he was interacting with all the Avengers and stuff, but he couldn't leave Earth.
Whereas this is very much, he saw him in the universe.
So this is just after that where he's gone, I've got to get out.
Mm.
He finally figured out how to get past Earth's little barriers.
Mm.
And he's been travelling around the cosmos for a while.
And basically Thanos tricks him, doesn't he? Like, you know, the whole goal of the series to get the... Thanos wants to get the Infinity.
Once Thanos gets reborn, Death says, if you want to be with me, and if you want to be by my side as a slave for eternity,
yes,
then you have to kill half the population of the universe. I've given you a power upgrade.
Yeah.
If you go forth and do that, you can work for me forever.
And Thanos, the Infinity Pool.
Yeah, he goes to the Infinity Well and stares into it to try to get some knowledge.
Mm.
Figures out not only that there is a way for him to do that quickly and not take a billion years, but there is only one person that can stop him, and it's a Silver Surfer.
Mm.
So he then goes and finds the Silver Surfer and tries to confuse him and try to get him on side so it wouldn't happen.
Yeah. And Thanos is a more nuanced character than I would have expected.
Yeah, he often gets portrayed as like a Hulkish character.
Yeah.
He's very much a calculating player.
And in this, is this common for Jim Starlin's Thanos? I found it was fascinating.
Yeah, this is just Jim Starlin.
Like, he's evil, but he's also got a keen intelligence.
Oh, yeah.
And he's quite aware of what he's doing. And the story was in two parts. The first part's kind of told through Silver Surfer's eyes.
So the first four issues are Silver Surfer.
Yes.
And we see Thanos come back to life, realize he's got the power upgrade, and then start tricking the Silver Surfer and putting him in scenarios where the Surfer has to agree with Thanos' point of view, which is that life is becoming a rampant force.
That's right.
And unless he kills off half the universe will kill itself.
It is like Tokyo at rush hour.
Yeah, and he goes to places and says, look, this planet can't sustain this many people.
Yeah.
If I don't kill half the universe is going to kill itself. I'm trying to save the universe.
Planet where he says these people will actually turn into carnivores. Remember he goes to that planet where they haven't developed like hunting instincts?
Yeah, there's
like
a great little...
They're breeding.
He drops into this little planet where there's this tiny little cute alien race.
Yeah.
And says, this is a really peaceful race. They don't know any war.
Mm.
Eventually, they're going to overpopulate. Resources are going to be fought over.
Mm.
They're going to invent wars. They're going to kill each other. They're going to become cannibals.
Yeah.
If I don't kill half of them now, that's what's going to happen to them.
And then the kicker is, the server's like, no. The kicker is, server has brought virus antibodies from Earth.
Yeah.
They're going to wipe out half of them.
They're going to wipe out, the entire population unless he goes and saves them.
Yeah. Which is what he does, isn't it? That's what he speeds off.
He speeds off to go and save them.
That was clever. Jim Starlin's a clever writer, isn't he? He's clever.
Because he spends his time going, Thanos is evil. And everyone understands Thanos is evil.
Yes.
But Thanos spends his time going, I'm not evil.
Mm.
Like, what I'm ultimately doing is saving this universe by taking half.
Yeah.
And he basically says, I'm amputating a leg to save the body.
Yeah.
do you not agree with this method?
Well, the best villains fully believe in their own motives, Stu, and are heroes of their own stories.
Absolutely.
You know, that's the best villains. And I must say, this is a particularly good example of how to write a villain so well.
Yes.
I must say, I had high expectations for this because, you know, given it a good height, Jim Starlin, good creator, this succeeded it, Stu, because when we got into the Thanos two-parter at the end, which is basically the story of him acquiring the Infinity Gems,
yes,
from all the Elders.
From the Elders.
Totally gripped. I read this on the train in two journeys, and I was like, wow, I'm actually taking time on the pages to grasp what's going on, because I was so intrigued.
And like, you kind of know that he's going to go from one to the next, picking up a stone each time.
Sure.
But then you get to the nuances of, he picks this stone up before this one, because he can use it to get the next one.
Yeah, he's clever.
And he's calculated which of the Elders are going to be easier or harder, and how to beat all... Like, he's planned every detail.
I liked the one that basically avoided the fight was Collector. Collector was like, you brought a good... something good enough. But even the Collector, he played.
Yeah, exactly. And, of course, the Collector at the time was like, it's just a worthless piece of glass.
Yeah.
Because I haven't been able to use it.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to tell him that. I'm going to make him bring me some of the rarest items of the universe, which Thanos does.
And, I mean, in all fairness, the Gardener seemed the most altruistic out of all the...
The Gardener's always been very much, I don't want a part of your universe.
Sure.
I've got my own little pocket of heaven, and that's all I want.
Yeah. He lost... But he didn't really want to fight either, did he? And Thanos didn't really want to fight him. Like,
Thanos, throughout all of this, has basically gone to all of them and said, if you give me the stone, I'll walk away.
Yeah.
And I don't want to fight any of you.
Yeah.
And in every time where they've challenged him, he's come up trumps because he's thought about and planned this out, but he always gives them an out. At the beginning of every encounter, he comes out with, I don't want to fight you. I've got respect. Like, you're an elder of the universe. I respect that.
Mm.
If you just give me that little gem...
I found it was fascinating, actually, how different each of the Elders were. Like, the one who was Might, the Champion, was just all-out aggression, just, like, fully roided out.
Yeah, the Champion was basically like a Hulk character.
Yeah. And he was just so stupidly... Thanos just played him for a fool.
I love the idea that each of these Elders was only using the gem subconsciously.
Yes.
And the gem was using the host.
Yeah.
So the hosts all had kind of traits inherited from their gems.
Mm.
So the champion was power hungry and a warmonger because he had the power gem.
Yeah.
So that was kind of influencing him just as much as he was using the stone.
Mm.
Which I really liked.
It was feeding each other, wasn't it?
Yeah, all of the characters kind of had the aspect of their personality that matched the stone.
The Grandmaster probably certainly gave him the toughest challenge, but even he got played.
Yeah, and at the end, Thanos was like, I could have taken this any thousands of ways, but this was the most fun.
Yeah, yeah.
And that actually fits in with Infinity War, like we've seen the trailers. Mm. Where there's a line where he says, balancing the universe isn't meant to be fun, but this brings a smile to my face.
Yeah. Actually, kind of dug Thanos.
Yeah.
Like, I only know Thanos from his very brief appearances in the movies.
Yeah.
And his reputation... Oh, he's in things, but I don't think he's ever been done as well as this. Like, I don't really like Thanos when he turns up in the comics and he's not very powerful and he's just in prison. And I'm like, really? That's the most we're doing with Thanos?
And every time he's been reincarnated, he's gotten more powerful. So, like, very early Thanos wasn't all that powerful.
Sure.
He got a power upgrade, then he fought the Avengers, almost won, and they were all kind of scared.
How about, just a flashback, when Silver Surfer turned up at the Avengers mansion and She-Hulk took a swing at him?
Yeah, like, I found that...
Like, She-Hulk, you know who this character is? Like...
I know, and then she was like, and then when they said it's Silver Surfer, she goes, oh, right, because of the surfboard. And I'm like, no, because he's fucking silver. Because
it's Silver Surfer.
It's like the 60s. And Cap's like, go back and read your files.
Go back and read your files, Cheryl. She's like, okay.
Yeah, that was a weird, beat right in the middle, right?
There's a funny thing in Marvel they do in the 80s and 90s where, especially in the 80s, I've read a lot of, Captain America in the 80s and stuff.
Yeah.
There's a lot of meanings of characters that act like they just have no idea, like, who they are. Like, despite the fact they've been around for a long time.
Yeah, exactly. And been involved in major events.
Yeah, and I get it. Like, it doesn't apply to all. Like, there's many a Johnny Storm and Spider-Man team up, but there's many characters that you think you really don't know, never.
But like, even like She-Hulk and Silver Surfer, sure, maybe they haven't been in a comic together, but
maybe, yeah.
Surely She-Hulk would know or recognise.
She's a bit of a Fantastic Four. You know what I mean?
Yeah, wouldn't you recognise the Silver Surfer?
Yeah. It was a weird...
When this chrome-plated guy comes in on a surfboard and you're like,
yeah,
oh, get out.
It's a weird thing to pick apart, but it was just funny more than anything.
I got to admit, that was one or two pages where I was like, what the fuck are they...
Yeah.
Really? Are they doing this?
But, yeah, and then Cap's like, maybe I need to start to follow this one myself.
Yeah, because Surfer basically comes to him and says, Thanos is collecting power. He's about to be a major threat.
Yeah.
And he's not dead anymore.
And Cap kind of gave him the spiel of the history.
Yeah, because Silver Surfer was kind of travelling around the universe looking for info on
how Thanos. Long had Thanos been around, Stu? Is he like a 70s creation? Like, when was his first appearances and stuff like that in, like, Avengers or whatever? Is it, you know, eons ago, or is it more like in the 80s?
I feel like it's the 70s.
Yeah. Like, if I'm betting, I'm saying 70s. I've got a feeling I've got, like, a Fantastic Four story that mentions Thanos.
Early 73.
Okay, cool. So, what are you saying is Thanos had been around, basically, around the block?
Yeah, so it comes up originally in Iron Man in 73.
Okay.
And then he jumps all over the place, largely in Captain Marvel, Marvel Feature, Marvel 2-in-1, that kind of spin-off-y, cosmic-y kind of book.
But not like an A-grader.
Certainly not like an A-grade villain.
Okay.
In 1990, though, he shows up in Silver Surfer, which is what we've just read.
Yes.
And at this point, they decide to make him a full-blown A-list villain.
And I think it's a great choice.
He had taken on the Avengers before, but again, he wasn't hugely powerful.
It's
on
a million people.
Yeah, exactly. He'd been beaten reasonably quickly. So that happened in the early 70s, where he took on the Avengers.
So it's kind of like Jim Starlin found him almost like a who's who and said, I'm going to do something with this character.
Yeah, well, he'd always been, like, obviously alien character works for someone like a Starlin, because you can work him into a cosmic story really easily.
Yeah.
And this guy already had, like, beams coming out of his eyes. He could teleport. He had all the cool things that Starlin likes in a character.
Now, I want to address an issue. The Ron LeMond in this was just staggeringly beautiful. And I found this was a time where I wasn't necessarily thinking, because there's obviously a lot of similarities to Darkseid, and people have often, you know...
Well, it was based on Darkseid.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. So he is basically kind of an inspiration from Darkseid.
Yeah, so Starlin said that the look was based on Kirby's Darkseid.
Okay, cool.
So it was a direct inspiration.
And did Starlin create him?
Yes.
Oh, so Starlin created him back in the 70s.
Yeah, Starlin wrote... Iron Man 55.
Okay.
Which is when he introduces this character.
I had no idea Starlin had been around that long. I thought Starlin was more like an 80s guy. Like, so Starlin was probably quite young at that point.
Yeah, so Jim Starlin...
That's interesting.
He was doing odd comics here and there, but yeah he was big in the 80s. Like, big in the 80s.
Oh, Starlin was huge in the 80s. I mean, he had runs on Batman, he created KGB Beast.
Yeah.
He's an excellent writer. Dude... I've got a lot of respect for Jim Starlin, and perhaps we should reach out to him on the show. He might do the show, you know.
That'd be an amazing guest.
Facebook, man.
It'd be an incredible guest.
I'll reach out to him and see if there's any chance of him doing the show.
Yeah.
I know you would probably have 1,000 questions for him, wouldn't you?
Oh, absolutely.
For Jim Starlin, yeah.
Absolutely.
I would say, Jim, I bow down to the guy who wrote Batman and the Cult, but I'm going to turn it over to my man, Stu, who's Mr. Cosmic.
So I'm in, and let's put something else that's amazing. Starlin's literally first job for Marvel was he wrote some pages for Amazing Spider-Man.
Right.
And then he did 3 issues of Iron Man, in which he introduced Thanos and Drax.
So bang, bang.
So literally he's like his first job at Marvel in 74, 73, and he's introducing characters that stayed with him for his entire career, and are now...
These days, he's a cool-looking guy with a goatee. He's very kind of, like, lean. He wears, like, skivvies and stuff. He looks like a pretty cool little guy.
Yeah, I would be too if I'd created Thanos.
Yeah, me too, yeah. It's awesome. And Marvel sent him over the massive bust, you know, with the whole throne and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It's pretty cool.
Oh, it's very cool.
Yeah. No, he's really getting his day in the sun, which he richly deserves.
Yeah. So, look, it took him a while, but Thanos, he hit his revival in the 1990s, which is what we've read.
Yes.
Comes into Silver Surfer, gets revived by Death, massive power upgrade, then finds the gems, becomes a massive threat to the universe.
I like the way...
Effectively God.
Him getting the gems, he was the hero in his story.
You know what I
mean? Like, there was no baddie to fight. It was Thanos versus these people basically playing kinds of chess to get the gems.
Well, it felt like Thanos was just doing the bidding of Death.
Yeah.
And the twist was at the end, Death said, "You're not an equal. You're my superior. I can't...
Yeah.
I don't want to sit next to you. I want to, I'm below you."
And that isn't always the case, though, is it? Because I've read many a Thanos story where he still loves Sick Puppy for Death.
Oh, absolutely. He is. Like, even in this book, he's lovesick.
Yeah.
But at this time, he was so powerful that even Death was saying, "I'm not at your level."
Now, have you read Infinity Gauntlet?
Bits of it, yeah. Not in the whole run.
I'm looking forward to next week, man. I actually, when I finished the book, this read... Because it wasn't a super long read. I almost straight away started reading Infinity Gauntlet. I've got it on my iPad ready to go, and I've got the trade. I bought the trade years ago, and I'm so looking forward to it.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to it.
But, I mean, at this point, just up to now, where we've seen Thanos collect these gems on a mission to kill half the universe, like, it's the perfect lead-in to Infinity War, which is out in less than 2 weeks.
100%.
I would so recommend anyone, even remotely interested,
goes
out and get... Like, the book was on special the other week.
Yeah.
They're so reasonably priced, even when they're not on special.
Oh, totally.
You can pick this up for maybe $15 at any time of the year.
And everyone I've put up on, you know, the Signal of Doom feed and stuff about this Rebirth of Thanos have been saying, "Man, that looks awesome."
Yeah.
And it's great, because this story, you get Silver Surfer, a really neat Silver Surfer story, and you get this Thanos story in the back end.
Yeah, and you don't need much cosmic knowledge to come into this.
No, you don't. It's really well explained.
You get a really nice introduction to the Elders of the Universe and Death as a person.
One thing I noticed, too, they actually say that all the Elders are members of their races. I noticed that in the thing. So it matched with what we read in Avengers No Surrender.
Yeah, but they are the last survivors. Even though they refer to themselves as, like, brothers.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
So that was cool. Stu, I'm actually going to give this a perfect 10. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was one of my favourite reads that we've done on The Signal, in terms of just a sheer enjoyment.
Yeah, I'm giving it a 10 as well. I thought the artwork was incredible, the story was brilliant.
And people who think comics are only one thing, I mean, how different is this to Nightfall? It's just night and day. And
yet, oh, absolutely.
Both perfect 10s, but completely
different. And for comics. Different reasons.
Yeah, different reasons.
Yeah.
Comics can be so many things. This at times was quite thought provoking. Actually, there was elements of there's a deepness to Dim Starlin.
Absolutely, he thrives on the stories that aren't necessarily action packed.
No,
like there's very few fight scenes in this book.
There's consequence,
but there's very much action and consequence. But it's planning, it's emotional sabotage. Mm. It's, you know, you're left thinking about this. Yeah.
And I honestly felt like I was very rarely... We're so used to reading comics where you rarely finish a comic these days and go, "Man, I need to read the next..." Not just next issue, but next chapter.
The next trade, yeah.
I was like, "Man, I need to read this."
Yeah, exactly.
But I was like, I'm really glad that you brought this...
This leaves you hungry for the next issue.
I would have... And I will say to people who are pumped up about the Marvel movies, like, "Well, yeah, read this book and then read Infinity Gauntlet. Because read this, because I think it sets the plate, you know?"
Absolutely. It gives you a baseline for Thanos.
Yeah, you understand.
It gives you his motivations and also how he approaches a challenge.
He's a clever guy. Or a clever...
Because a lot of people, when Death says, "Kill half the population of the universe and then you'll sit next to me," a lot of villains would have just gone to the nearest planet, killed half of that planet and moved to the next one.
Yeah. And Thanos realized that would take forever.
And Death, like, calls him back on it a couple of times and is like, "What are you doing? You're not killing anyone." And he goes... I'm playing the game, and I'll get it done quicker.
Yeah, no, he's definitely a menacing character, and I'm fascinated to see what this Infinity Gauntlet's like. I've never really kind of been that turned on by the whole Infinity Gauntlet stuff, but now I'm actually like, "Wow, this is actually it's a real wake up call to me." And I actually did have high expectations, and it wasn't one of those cases where I thought this is going to be shit. I actually thought it'd be quite good, but it really blew me away. And it was the very, very beginning image of that Skull Fortress thing. And I want to give credit to Ron Lim as well, because I think Ron Lim on art was essential. I think he was fantastic.
Yeah, you don't often hear people praising a different artist when Jim Starlin's involved.
Sure.
Because traditionally, Jim Starlin's done his own artwork as well.
Right. What is, man, he's a double threat then.
Yeah, like when he did the death of Captain Marvel.
Yep.
Which was one of his biggest selling.
Is that he'd done as well?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
He drew it, he wrote it, he did everything.
Well, dude, I picked that up recently for sales, so we will do that at some point.
At some point, yeah. But for sure. Look, Starlin is such a talented comic book creator. It's
He's
in every field. Like, he hasn't just done one thing.
Saying, he's very accessible on Facebook. I've got him on Facebook, so I am going to reach out.
Yeah.
And I'll definitely let you know. And I'll mention that my co-host is, like, you know, heavily into your cosmic stuff. And like,
I love it, yeah.
Yeah.
And who wouldn't after reading this?
Oh, yeah. Exactly. I actually think this has got really wide appeal to anyone who's really kind of like, especially if you've kind of bought into the concept of the Marvel movies over the last 10 years.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you've got 2 weeks before the movie comes out.
Yeah. Use it wisely, kids.
See, I've started watching a Marvel movie a day. There's 18 movies to get through before Infinity War.
She's a professional.
Black Panther's going to be tough because it's not out on streaming platforms yet, so I might have to go to the cinema the day before and watch Black Panther again, just to... Just so I can complete this set. Because there are 18 movies, but, like, you got, like, 10 days.
Yeah, got to make it count.
Watch one a night, throw two or three on a weekend.
Make the moves.
You can do it. Can do it, people. Start.
Exactly. Now, so you gave it a 10, I gave it a 10, and this is going to be really part one of this conversation, because next week we're doing Infinity Gauntlet.
Yeah, technically a different story, but it runs in so nicely from this one.
Same creative team that leads straight from this.
Exactly.
So this is... Do art on that as well?
Ron Lim is involved, yeah.
Excellent. Because I love that art. And I want to pay one thing, the glowering Thanos with, like, the stars in his eyes. I love that image, too. You know, often it would go to Thanos with sort of, like, the darkness in his eyes, but just a starlight coming out. And it was just beautiful art. I really dug it. Now, in terms of housekeeping at Signal of Doom, so next week we've got Infinity Gauntlet. Stu, I was thinking that we might do, like, Star Wars Volume 1 by... Jason Aaron and John Cassidy in the lead up to Solo at some point.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah,
I like that. I think we're going to need to do some Deadpool as well before Deadpool 2. Definitely. So,
can I think about what Deadpool we should do? I want to have a think.
I'm a big fan of Merc with a Mouth.
That'd be great.
That's right up there for me.
Merc with a Mouth is awesome.
But there's a bunch of different options I think we can look at.
Yep, for sure.
Deadpool and Cable would be a cool one for...
We've done Volume 1.
Deadpool 2, so that'd be cool.
What about Volume 2?
We could do something like that. There's so many options for Deadpool that you and I both love, so that's going to be an easy decision, I think.
Exactly. The only hard part will be, which one, because we love so many.
Yeah, we'll come in with a short list and they'll match each other. It's not going to be...
What else, Stu? What are we doing? Run me through again. What are we doing the week after Infinity Gauntlet? Do we plan that far ahead, or do we just lose all plans then?
Well, apart from the full breakdown of Infinity Gauntlet, we haven't got a trade booked in yet.
Okay, all right.
But we're going to have to start looking at movies that are coming up, because it's a lot coming up.
Indeed.
Luke Cage is coming up as well.
Yeah.
Shortly after.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point.
We've got a bunch of things that we can be reading. Yeah. We've also got ongoing projects.
Mm.
We've got 52 that we're working through.
That's exactly right.
We've got some more Nightfall that we're working through.
Volume 3. We'll take a little bit of a breather on that. I think we can put Nightfall back board later into the year.
Yeah, but we've got a bunch of...
We've got
plenty of options. We'll keep you guessing.
We've got Conan as well.
We do. We've got some Punisher, we've got some Conan.
New stuff going on. I asked people for suggestions, actually, and I actually don't have it in front of me right now, but the people are throwing out some decent suggestions, which I'll run.
See, I wouldn't mind doing a couple of weird listener's choice.
Oh, definitely.
You know, go for something out of left field, way out there.
The guys pitch all sorts of stuff at me. And I'm always like, yeah, we're happy to do it. Like, there's very little that we're not going to do. Like, we're open, man.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, don't forget, Stu and I will be making our famous guest appearance at the Trivia Night. Stu, we're going to be in team with Ray. I told Ray to keep studying. He's talking about...
Oh, we're on a team with Ray?
Yeah, we're on a team with Ray.
Well, what's the point? How are we going to get any competition if we're with Ray?
Well, Ray is...
I was looking forward to versing Ray. I reckon that'd be a decent competition.
Okay, well, let me throw that out there.
If we're on the same team, I pity anyone that comes along. Give us a challenge.
You and me, and potentially Michelle. Michelle's declared herself a maybe.
Between you, me, Ray, and a maybe Michelle, I don't think the competition's going to be there. I think...
All these kids.
I'm going to go super confident.
I don't want to bruise these kids' egos too much, because the next week they're going to buy stuff off me. So I sort of want them to be a bit hungry, you know?
Well, come in. Maybe they'll have, you know, the chance of versing a champion and then buying the shit that he wanted.
Exactly. I mean...
Then you can sell it to him.
Don't forget...
is how I won that trivia night. I read all his books.
Yeah. Don't forget that ZB Cebulski... I mean, don't get me started again, but he was going on...
I mean, you keep giving away this trivia knowledge. We should be keeping that until after the Martin trivia, shouldn't we? We've got some trivia there.
That's a good point. All right, so please follow us on the Facebook page and the Facebook group, both things. You'll have to monitor both. It's a fucking mission.
Dave sets up pages, then regrets setting up pages.
Well, I mean, it's the price of popularity. You know what I'm saying? I'd like to have a little droid, because I'm going to have to pay a droid. You know, just oil. That'd be about it. Other than that, you know, obviously, buy them on Soulfighter. And, Stu, any comments for the audience? Anything?
Check us out on YouTube as well. We've got a few episodes up. We've got videos coming out.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, subscribe.
I mean, tattoo yourself if you want to, I guess.
Sure, best tattoo. We'll sign it.
Yeah, I'll sign it.
Yep.
Do you want to charge a fee?
I reckon if they've tattooed themselves,
That's fine.
With a Signal of Doom logo, we'll just...
Stamp approved.
We'll just give them...
Tramp stamp?
Anyway, forehead, doesn't matter.
All right. With that, we will see you next week when we'll be doing Infinity Gauntlet. Goodbye.
See ya.